Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. To the streets, I tell you, workers, students, homeowners, all in the streets across the country today. In D.C., you had people in the streets, workers going, hey, these government contractors who've been getting fat and happy off our backs, enough is enough. And you know what gets me is you got these Republicans who are going, wow, what we need to do is it's so good for these people, these workers. We need to get rid of prevailing wage and the Fair Labor Standards Act. And have the Working Families Flexibility Act. Oh, yeah. So we can screw you out of overtime. So we can screw you out of wages and push it down that much further. Poverty. Oh, desperation class, here we come. Also, students in the streets protesting, you know, the massive student loan debt and backing the idea of something that I've been in support of for quite some time, this idea of a transaction tax, a Tobin tax, whatever you want to call it, on the criminals on Wall Street. Maybe might possibly stave off some of the speculation, a touch of it. What they're proposing is very minimal. I would have gone much higher, obviously, but hey, a step in the right direction. Also, homeowners hit the streets in D.C. protesting losing their homes, and they asked the Attorney General Eric Holder, why don't you go out and arrest some bankers? Instead of screwing with us, why don't you go after the people who really caused this disaster? Also going to talk about the war on the poor as it continues, as the GOME demands massive cuts to food stamp programs at a time when, well, we're lining the pockets of huge multinational welfare kings. Also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We got Pat LaMarche back in the studio with me. Pat, thanks for being here.
You know, I'm very happy to be here, and it's so nice for you to have it sort of misty and warm.
It's a wonderful place.
It's a sun.
Tropical paradise right here.
You do look like an orange in a sea of green, like an orange grove. It's warm. The air conditioning's broken.
Well, that happens.
Yeah.
You know, this is not...
We're not the one percenters.
This isn't Wall Street here.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, we're not near the bull. We're getting the horns, but we're not near the bull.
When the AC breaks, we sweat.
Yeah.
That's the way that goes.
It is what it is, but... We will have a top-notch show tonight.
Absolutely.
Full of vigor.
We're going to wring it right out of ourselves.
Right. That's right.
I feel like Scarlett O'Hara. You know, like, they just, mammy, it's just a little warm. I'm not used to this weather anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you're from the land of cold.
Yeah, I've got, like, real thick blood that just, you know, it has to...
I grew up in Cleveland. I had the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, we had snow and lots of it.
You had lake effect snow.
Yes, all the time.
You had lots of snow in a matter of seconds.
Yes.
Now, people who've never been to lake effect snow wouldn't believe it when it happened.
It's just white out. Just boom, done.
And then there's like 18 inches of snow on the ground where it wasn't literally 2 hours ago.
When I was a kid, we used to actually, you know, we had some big snowstorms. We had a second floor window that we would dive headfirst out into,
we
the,
used to do that too.
Into the snowbanks.
Yeah.
You would literally dive into the snow headfirst, yeah. like a pool.
Yeah. We did that, too, but we had to wait longer for the snow to fall. It would take overnight to get the kind of snow you could get in 2 hours.
Yeah, I miss snow.
Do you miss snow?
I do. I miss snow.
You know what? I don't
miss it. And we never missed a day of school when I was a kid.
Oh, I know, because that's what, you know, plows were invented for.
Well, we walked. So, you know, there was no, I went to Catholic school, so you had to walk. There's kids who got bussed. Because we had this idiotic idea in Cleveland and in a lot of cities when I was growing up. We were going to take poor kids from one side of town
and
put them on a bus and take them to a poor community on the other side of town. So we had accidents, and a lot of this stuff came out of that.
They were actually supposed to go to wealthy communities.
No.
They weren't supposed to go from poor community to poor community. Yeah, no, that was done wrong.
You think?
Amazingly so, yeah.
You know who got wealthy off that, though? The people who owned the buses.
Yeah.
You screwed up all those kids' education.
Yeah.
Cost.
I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, and we had busing too, and not much snow, so it wasn't a big problem. But Maine, when I moved to Maine, kicking and screaming at the age of 14, saying to my father, "Just because there's an end to the earth doesn't mean we actually have to live on it," you know.
I love Providence. It's a beautiful place.
Providence is wonderful. Bangor, Maine? Are you kidding me?
That's a hellhole.
The radio stations there still had FCC regulations that they shut off at sundown, which was before we get out of school in the winter. You know, sundown was like 3:30 in the afternoon.
That happens. That happens. My favorite thing about Providence is the Edgar Allan potato.
Ed Graham Potato?
Evidently, that's where Mr. Potato Head was founded. So oh, all around the city, I don't know how
I was just
the last
wondering,
time
if you eat
there.
It, do you get really drunk?
No, I mean, they have Mr. Potato Heads all around the city where they've named them. And my favorite one, obviously, is the Edgar Allan.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, we have had this conversation because you've been to Providence way since I left.
Right.
Yeah. They didn't have the Edgar Allan Potato Head then. Then they just had the inner city smash your potato head in kind of thing. I grew up in Chad Brown Housing Project, and I'm white, so I don't know if I'm racist or not. And I really mean that. I think white privilege is such a gift that you just have no clue.
I remember. No, because I remember the privilege of getting beat up every day.
Well, I was a girl, and that is a little bit easier.
Yeah,
but,
I remember the game Chase the White Kid and Beat the Snot Out of Him. That was a fun game for somebody.
You don't think it had anything to do with you?
Nothing to do with me. I was small. I was not.
Wow, you swelled up when they beat you then, because you're tall now.
Swelled up is the accurate assessment there.
Well, no, you're tall.
Yeah.
You're a big fella.
Wasn't then. No. But, you know, with the weather, I'm going, you know, with the heat and all that, you know, at least we're not Oklahoma. Did you see this EF5 twister? 200 miles per hour. And what got me is, you know, I'm reading through this, I'm going, wow, this is a horrible thing. And last night before we left, I saw the news report, 51 people killed, 20 children. And I'm going, wow, that's horrible. I wake up this morning, they revised that down, which is a great thing, to 24. And I'm going, why in the hell would you report 51 people if you don't have it confirmed?
Oh, you know,
I mean,
we're in the media. We both know that the media system is just not, it's not anything like what it used to be anymore. I mean, literally, people are being on the street reporters. Send us your video from your phone. I mean, volunteer writers, volunteer, you know, blogs are the stories now. I was a commentator for many, many years. You can't use a blog as actual, you know, information. No, nobody's blog. Nobody's. Nope. Even if they're a journalist and they do a blog on the side. You can't quote a blog.
So you're a snob then?
No, it's only if integrity is a matter of class, which I don't happen to think it is.
Okay.
You know,
no, but I look at this and I go, you know, this whole culture, we got to get the biggest number first, and we've got to be there first. And even if it's wrong, well, we'll retract it tomorrow.
I'm sure the three people all saw a different part of somebody's body and reported three people were dead, you know? I mean, I think you've got all these people on the street saying all kinds of stuff. The official word is not coming from the first responders, you know? And there are no paid reporters anymore. You know, the whole alternate story, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Where they're just cutting corners at all, and who can blame them? There's no money for actual journalism. All the money goes completely to sensationalism.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just, you know.
I might have been watching Fox at the wrong time today.
Yeah.
Well, any time is the wrong time, but I might have been watching at the wrong time. But when they were interviewing the senators from Oklahoma,
Coburn and Inhofe,
yeah, not a single interviewer, not a single reporter, asked why they voted against relief for Hurricane Sandy. Was that such a tough question?
Well, yeah, actually, it is. you know, because, well, they don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they were against it. I mean, they were mocking it from the beginning. So, you know, this is this whole little echo chamber, this whole little theater box that they've put through. And, you know, I look at Coburn and Inhofe, and, you know, I find both of them disgusting. You know, you look at time after time, they've gone and they've tried to defund FEMA. They've tried to take money from people who need it. And I look at 2011, you know, the vote that when FEMA ran out of money, he said that funding them would have been unconscionable. Unconscionable. I mean, stop and think about that. We're talking about citizens of this country getting help at their hour of need. And to him, that is unconscionable.
I was in Baton Rouge within days of Hurricane Katrina. And I was down there reporting for a bunch of newspapers, and I was broadcasting on about six radio stations in New England. And I watched FEMA people interviewing. There were about 7,800 people in the shelter I was reporting from. And these people showered with fire hoses. There was a school there. The people that 80% of people in New Orleans had never been out of Louisiana before Hurricane Katrina, and 40% of people in New Orleans had never been out of New Orleans. So when you're talking about moving people, and that's the other thing, they shouldn't be living in Oklahoma? Are you kidding?
Well, I mean,
they shouldn't live anywhere south of Canada or east to the, you know, I mean, really, is this the attitude that people shouldn't be living in places because there could be a tornado? Right, because the people should be living in Oklahoma are Native Americans. But then all the different oil companies that discovered oil in Oklahoma got the United States military to kill the Indians for them. And then after that, they brought in all the poor to work in the oil rigs. And then when the oil was gone, they left the poor there to live in a place where they can't get out of in case of disaster.
That's the American way. That's good for profit.
But people like Pat Robertson are actually saying they shouldn't live there. Why are they living there? Oh, I don't know. Why don't they just live in their other home? The one on the Cape or the one at Martha's Vineyard?
Yeah. Well, you know, well, there you go. But you know, you brought up the showering and with the fire hoses and all that. And I got a clip of Barbara Bush that just I can. It's one of the, as soon as you said that, it just harkened me back to well, here's Barr.
What I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is they all want to stay in Texas. Everybody is so overwhelmed by the hospitality. And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged. This is working very well for them. This is working very well for them. This is working very well for them.
That evil bag of bile with the pearls and the white hair is the reason her son could kill Iraqis without any compunction.
Well, I mean, you think about this, and you look at what she just said. You know, well, these are people who lived in poverty. They're living 20,000 people in the Astrodome after their homes and everything. It's working well for them. It's just so wonderful.
You go to the Ninth Ward.
Because we're so hospitable.
Well, you know, people are nice to you when your sister drowns in a flood that didn't have to happen. You know, people like they their little hearts break when they realize that this is a Katrina story. I was working with a whole pile of volunteers, and I was writing their stories. And there was a woman who was laying on a bed in a bedroom that had about 800 people in it. So it was one room in this. It was like Madison Square Garden. It was called the River Center Shelter. Well, it was called the River Center. We called it a shelter. But there were like 800 people in one room. And this one woman was laying on her bed. And, you know, her bed was 2 inches from the bed of a total stranger. The people getting raped in the bathrooms. It was just crazy stuff, right? It was everything an inner city would be.
It's working pretty well.
Everything an inner city would be, only in a building. And so this little boy she had would wait on her and dote on her and lay in her bed with her and sleep with her at night. He was about 8, and then he would get up and he would leave and he would come back to her. And finally, Hurricane Rita started bearing down on us. Now, we didn't let anybody have a TV. There were no TVs brought in. It was martial law. People were leaving by bus to go to cleanup crews. And all these people in the shelter, they worked. Everybody who could work went to work. That's another thing nobody knows. They'd empty the shelters out like available workforce to go and move trees out of the middle of streets and things. So the buses would come and pick people up and take them to work. And eventually they heard things that were going on like, oh, guess what? There's another Class 4 hurricane on the way. And all these people with post-traumatic stress disorder who showed up without any shoes or socks or pants or whatever because they had just been flooded out of their homes started freaking out. So this woman gets up at that point, and she goes over to missing persons. And she says to the old man that's waiting, working there, a Red Cross volunteer, I need someone to go find my daughter. Now, it's been about 13 days since Katrina. And he says, find your daughter. She said, yes, my daughter, I was in the Ninth Ward with my son and my daughter, and I had to leave my daughter there, and I need someone to go find her because there's another hurricane coming. And he said, well, how old is your daughter? And she said, 2. She's about 2 years old. And, you know, everybody went to a total shock that this woman's daughter could be left behind and that she doesn't say anything. She just lays on her cot for 13 days. So he says, well, I'm going to have to get somebody over here. He brings the authorities over, and after more and a psychiatrist, and after more investigation, it turns out that when she went for help, when she left her son and her daughter in the third floor of the attic floor, and she swam for help, and a man picked her up in a boat and went back to get the son and the daughter, the son who had been holding his sister up had not been able to hold her anymore. and she had drowned. And nobody was allowing anyone to put any dead people in the boats. They had to leave them behind. And this was Barbara Bush was talking about, how incredibly fortunate these people are. And that's the attitude of what happened to Sandy survivors. There's not enough misery to inflict on somebody else as long as it ain't your kind, and it ain't your people, and it ain't somebody you got to worry about.
Wow. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
All around the city hall, I'm ready to shine. All around the city hall, I'm the ready.
The Chicago Teachers Union, SEIU, Unite Here, and community activists wrapped up 3 days of actions in a march for educational justice in Chicago on Monday. It's the latest in a community movement to save 54 schools from planned closings. Speaking at a rally Monday, this SEIU school employee said that the unions and community activists will press the city again on Wednesday to keep the schools open.
We're going to be there on May 22nd. We're going to continue to march today to call attention to this issue, because all of these parents are not only workers or parents. They have their children in these schools. It's not right. And we want Mayor Rahm Emanuel to listen to the community, to listen to the workers, and more importantly, listen to the children.
Recently reelected Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis says the protests are not only against school closings, but also against what she calls misguided corporate school reforms. The unions are also mobilizing politically against Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Chicago is a people's town.
All 5 University of California medical centers are seeing strike action today as healthcare workers walk off the job to demand fair pay, retirement security, and increased patient safety. Jesse Russell reports.
As many as 30,000 nurses and technical workers are expected to be off the job and walking the picket lines. The workers calling the strike are members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. But other unions that represent UC medical employees are also expected to respect the strike line. One of the primary issues of the workers has been the increased requests for concessions by the workers, while executives continue to watch their salaries grow year over year. The unions and management have agreed that key personnel shall stay on the job during the strike to ensure the safety of patients. Last week, the university canceled all elective surgical procedures. The union has been in contract talks with management for nearly a year. 2 weeks ago, 97% of voting AFSCME workers authorized the union to call a strike as leverage in contract negotiations.
Hundreds of low-wage workers in Washington, D.C. employed under federal contracts, concessions, and leases are striking today. The workers at Ronald Reagan and old post office buildings, the Smithsonian Museums, and Union Station are all calling on President Obama to guarantee a living wage and a voice on the job. The workers have formed Good Jobs Nation, an organization to ensure private contractors pay living wages and improve working conditions for all workers employed by federal dollars. Tuesday's strike follows actions by low-wage workers in Detroit, Milwaukee, New York, St. Louis, and Chicago. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do you advocate getting rid of the minimum wage? Would that create more jobs?
Absolutely, and it would help the poor, the people who need a job. The minimum wage is a mandate. We're against mandates, so why should we have it? No, it would be very beneficial.
Everything's raising but the wages. Everything's raising but the wages. Gasoline, groceries, and our wages. Everything's raising but the wages.
Yeah, I think I agree with Ron Paul there. I do. The minimum wage, do away with it completely. We've got all these unemployed people. We should get them back to work, buck an hour. We could solve unemployment just like that. Now, granted, we would have, nobody to buy anything, and I don't think anybody eventually would hire anybody to buck an hour, and you'd have an economy spiraling into the toilet. But, hey, there wouldn't be an unemployed, right? See how idiotic that idea is? Let's do away with the minimum wage. Let's weaken labor laws. Let's get rid of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Make those people work overtime. And my favorite, do away with prevailing wage, something that helps raise living conditions. And for me, I want my government being the one that says, you know what, we're going to be the standard by which business should be conducted, and we're going to take the high road, not lead the race to the bottom, but actually, oh, I don't know, consider using our tax dollars not only to benefit us when the service or the good or the, you know, the road or the bridge that we're building, but also in the wages that are paid. You know, there's that reverberation effect thing we talk about. People spend money locally. That's what we should be talking about. And I look at this Demos report that just came out recently that said, you know what? You've got nearly 2 million private sector jobs funded by government money, our money, yours and mine, that, well, pay too little for a family to live on, making less than $12 an hour. And, of course, you know, no benefits or pension or any of that stuff, which is why I think we need people in the streets. And today in D.C. there were, which is why I've asked Melissa Rosenborough. She is a striking worker at the McDonald's at the National Air and Space Museum. I mean, we have to have McDonald's in there? Melissa, thanks for taking time for me. So, Melissa, in looking at what took you out in the streets today?
Trying to get more money.
So, let me ask you, you know, is it something that McDonald's can do at the National Air and Space Museum that we couldn't do for ourselves?
Sure. I mean, you know, they could take pride in helping us out, getting what we need and everything. I mean, like, they're not suffering.
No, in fact, their CEO, he makes a million hours? It would take you a million hours to make what the CEO makes?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I have looked at the board. We bring in $40,000 in one day or more. You know, we have a business.
And I've been to the National Air and Space Museum. There's a huge stream of people. So where does that money go if it's not going to the people who are creating the wealth, people like you?
I have no idea.
I would guess it's going into the pocket of someone. If it's not going into the workers' pockets.
No, it's not.
So as you guys have taken to the streets at the National Air and Space Museum, the Reagan Building, a number of other places across the city, what was the common theme? What was the message?
What was the message? Well, trying to get Obama to more money.
And to raise the minimum wage?
Raise the minimum wages. And because, you know, it's like people have been working there for 10 years, and they're only making $8.80, you know.
So let me ask you this. Since President Obama has come out in the State of the Union address and said he wants to see the minimum wage raised to $9 an hour, you think that's enough?
That ain't no money.
Well, I mean, that's what the president is what he's saying.
I'm 53 years old. I have bills. I live in a house. I have a son that I still take care of, you know. And I have grandkids. A lot of times my grandbabies, you know, they like to go places and do things. I'm always saying, now they don't have it. You know what I'm saying? I'm living on from paycheck to paycheck. Sometimes I don't even have enough to pay all my bills. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to pay one bill. That's no all of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. And a lot of working people I talk to are in the same boat. And the reality is to me, the answer is not President Obama. To me, the answer is you, Melissa. It's your coworkers. It's everyone in those industries saying, folding their arms and saying, we're not working until we get a fair shake of the profits that we create.
That's right. That's right. But then we had some like were scared, you know, and everything and stuff and didn't want to participate and everything. But we did. It was a lot of us that on that space museum that really did good. They came out and they represented, you know, and everything. So I can speak highly. I can really speak highly of today, you know, that out of the outcome of everything, you know, like I say, but we gotta continue to do this. We just can't do it now and just let it go, you know, because like, even after Obama's 4 years is up, if nothing happens now, we're going to really be in trouble.
Now, and for me, I look at this and this whole idea that we're using taxpayer dollars, and this is to me the important part of this. We're using taxpayer dollars to create, well, poverty wage jobs. And to me, that should not be the role of we the people. It should not be the role of government to create more misery. I think we should be using our tax dollars to lift us up instead of tear us down.
Mm-hmm. And the contractors, they make so much money, you know, and I mean, you know, all the federal buildings, they have no problem, you know, in getting their pay. But when now that it's us doing what we're doing, you know, like say when tomorrow we all go to work and stuff, you know, it's going to be some heads turning and some, you know, some reactions and stuff. But then, you know, I really feel good about what I did because I stood up for myself.
And you should. You know, tell me the type of people that were out on the line with you. What kind of jobs are we talking about when you talk about the contractors who are doing jobs? You know, because I got to be honest, I go into the National Air and Space Museum, and I think that the gift shop and the stuff that's there run by, you know, by us, turns out those are contractors.
Uh-huh. But like in the McDonald's, we got cleaners. We got what people that does the floor. Because, you know, we have to make sure the floor is safe and clean and whatever, you know, for the tourists to come in and eat, you know, and sit down. You know,
and to cook the food. I mean, because I don't want to eat food.
Exactly.
So what should we be doing? What do you want us to do to help? Because I think this is a community effort. It's just not you. It's all of us. And I truly believe that we're all in this together. And if we allow you and your coworkers to get the screws, eventually it's going to come back to us as well. So what do you want us to do?
Call the president.
There you go.
Write the president.
Go right to the top.
And get his signature.
There you go. And to me, is this something that you think he can do with executive order?
Sure. Because, you know, we're the little people. It's so many big people that's out there can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
Because we've been sitting in the midst of representatives and chairmen and all kind of people. It's just been going on. So, you know, it can be done.
I agree. You know, but I look at this and, you know, there's a number of campaigns across the country, Chicago, New York, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Detroit, places where fast food workers and retail workers have said, you know what, $15 an hour, no less, we need to have a living wage that we can support our families. Is that something that, is that where you're going towards? Is this what we're looking for?
Yes, it is. And we want the president to sign a consecutive order to sign the paper. I mean, you know, do whatever you need to do because really, it's got to do with a lot of important people, but the president's got the last say so.
Yeah, and he's going to have.
You know, this, like you say, this thing like minimum wage is $9. Who can live on $9 when people have 1, 2, 3 kids and they paying rent and stuff, you know? I mean, you know, that's what truly makes me like I am is because when I get up in the morning and I walk in that building, for the money that I'm making and as hard as I work, sometimes my body says no, but I got to go.
Yeah. What do you say to the person, Melissa, who says, you know, fast food restaurants and, you know, the service sector industry, just teenagers, you know, people, part-time jobs, second jobs, little pin money, if you will.
I'm 53. And that's not true.
I got to be honest. You know, I go to my local McDonald's and I don't see anyone under 50 there. Because the sad reality is what you've got is, and maybe it was teenagers when I was a kid, but the sad reality is the parents are competing for those jobs to help feed those teenagers.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, everybody has to have a job.
No, I'm with you. No, I'm right there with you.
Everybody got to have a job.
So what do we do? The ask again is to call the president, and there's an action at goodjobsnation.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com, goodjobsnation.org, a chance for you to sign up, sign the petition, tell the president, hey, you shouldn't be the leader to the bottom. You shouldn't be leading this race to the bottom. We should be like your crummy education policy, let's have that be the race to the top. That seems to me to be the way to go. Melissa, I appreciate the time. It was great talking with you, and thanks so much for what you did today.
All right, thank you. You have a blessed night.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Stock market soars, exulted a typical headline in early May when the Dow Jones average topped 15,000. But this index of Wall Street wealth gives a false picture of our nation's true economic health. Yes, the privileged few are doing extremely well. But the workaday many are struggling and falling further and further behind as the jobs market sinks steadily from mere recession down into depression. The monthly unemployment reports don't tell the depths of misery out here in the real world beyond the view of Wall Street and Washington elites. For example, President Obama hailed the news that unemployment dipped to 7.5% in April. Unstated, though, was the stark reality that this good news dip was not due to a jump in job offerings, but to a bad news labor market so weak and discouraging that Americans are dropping out of it or never entering it. More than a third of our working age population is no longer even in the job market, and only 58.6% of us are employed. Put the opposite way, 41% of the potential workforce is not working, about 102 million people. One more statistic, and it's a chiller. More than one out of five American families report that last year, not a single family member had a job. Our people are trapped in a jobs crisis that's sucking the economic vitality out of our nation, but our leaders even refuse to acknowledge it. In fact, corporate chieftains deliberately exacerbate the crisis by hoarding trillions of dollars that ought to be rushed into job-creating expansions. And politicians add to the casualties by gleefully firing hundreds of thousands of teachers, firefighters, and other valuable public employees. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's middle class is burning to the ground, while Washington fiddles with nonsense and Wall Street feathers its own nest. It's disgraceful.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You are a liar.
Yay. Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
We don't think of the bottom. We do it for a precious money. Let's go for the lot. And then we'll pay for it.
Check out the website for ricksmithshow.com. So, you know, I go back to this, Pat, and what Melissa had to say was, oh, we want the president to do something. And the ask is, we want the president to do it. And I understand it, because I think with an executive order, he could say with any contracting that we do, there has to be some kind of living wage. I think that he has the power to do that.
Yeah. He has a lot of power.
Yeah. The question is, will he use it? And for me, it's, I'm of the mindset, you don't wait for a politician to give you something, you stand up and you demand it. Which is why I think you need more of these actions, more people into the streets, more people demanding this.
Well, I think you do stand up and demand it. And I think the people who shop, who go eat when they're at the Air and Space Museum need to know that. I mean, I've spent, it felt like, $18 a hot dog to the little vendor outside. You know, you see McDonald's inside and it's those same low prices you've come to count on, you know. And Paul Newman coffee, what's not to love, right? And what's not to love is there's an 80-year-old man waiting on you.
Oh, no, they're teenagers.
Who ought to be on Social Security.
Teenagers.
You know, oh, but by the way, he is on Social Security because he's making $5.26 a month because he was a minimum wage employee his whole life.
No, no, he's bored. He's bored and he's looking for a part-time. He just needs...
Well, you know what? That fryer later burn just gave him something to think about.
He, in fact, like Pat Robertson says, you know, I got this clip of Pat Robertson that I think I just adore.
Push that retirement age out to 70 or 72, and it's not going to hurt anybody because people really like to work. They don't want to sit around. There's nothing worse than sitting on a rocking chair rusting out.
You know, it has hurt me that he won't retire. You know, Pat Robertson retired.
He's a comic genius. What would we do without his pearls of wisdom?
We have other bloviating blowfish that will keep us company. I'm absolutely certain of it. This man said that I could get a sweater with the devil in it at Goodwill. Trust me, I've been shopping for months now looking for this said sweater.
Well, I mean, who else could get away with telling a woman that she'd just be happy that her husband gives her a meal when he goes and cheats on her?
Well...
who else could
Ginger White. Ginger White could be happy about that. Oh, thank God. All I'm going to do now is take Herman Cain's money. I don't actually have to have sex with him anymore because he was the worst partner I ever had.
Well, you know, there you go. Herman.
And, you know, I have something to say about President Obama. He could do this. These people have taken to the streets. He could do this. He could also commute the death sentences of people on death row who, by the way, are not getting their DNA re-examined. He could do all kinds of things the man should do. He's not doing them. And so at what point does... This is the problem. People feel powerless. And when the guy that they thought was the good guy can't polish his white hat long enough to, like, actually charge in and do something good, who would this hurt? McDonald's, really? McDonald's is the reason you can use your credit card now without signing for it. Yeah. McDonald's, there's nothing they don't get. Nothing. And so... is he going to stand up to him? Wouldn't we all... I would love the fantasy of the week. Imagine if President Obama said nobody is getting a contract from the federal government unless they pay $12.50 an hour.
With health care and pension.
Absolutely. Can you imagine if he said that? We'd all drop dead of coronaries. They wouldn't have to worry about labor movement anymore.
We've already got the laws. And for me, this is where you have a prevailing wage law that says, you know what, we have to pay a reasonable wage. You know,
they think reasonable is $1.230.
And then we make it, you know, $12.50, $15 an hour. I've worked in a fast food restaurant for a very short period of time, and I'm glad I don't do it because it's a lot of work.
And nobody's nice to you.
And then there's the part you got to deal with customers, and there's nothing worse than that.
When I was homeless in New York City, right, the night I was, 47,000 other people were homeless in New York City. 50,000 is the most recent count. These people had jobs. If you really think it's fun eating your cheeseburger when the person didn't have adequate hygiene, enjoy your cheeseburger.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, there's really a point where homeless shelters are offsetting the cost of cheap labor in the United States. They're giving cheap employers a place for their workforce to live. We used to believe in workforce housing. You know, the shipyards and all the things when they would gear up and build housing. And then this was workforce housing so that you could have a readily available supply of workers a walking distance to you. Now workforce housing is literally homeless shelters.
Yeah, I mean, we've moved away from the company towns and we've put people into warehouses.
I've got up on 9,000 Facebook pages, give or take a few. The little palm card, the color palm card that we're going to be handing out tomorrow about the retailers who won't sign on for fair working conditions for people in Bangladesh. We're not even talking good working conditions. We're just talking, as my friend Rick Smith says, you go to work in the morning and you get to go home at night. You don't die in the meantime unless, you know, it's a natural cause and you're 800. So I put it up, and otherwise amazingly intelligent people are saying, you don't know the whole story, why they wouldn't sign it. And my answer is 1,127 people died. No, but you don't know the whole story. But, well, 1,127 people died, and guess what? There have been more accidents since, and more people have died. And these people are still doing business over there and refuse to have anything change.
Right.
No, but you know, I know the managers at these places. They're nice people.
I do, too.
Right.
And their neighbors do. They're not the ones making these decisions.
Absolutely not. And if they were the ones making these decisions, if they bucked the system too much, they'd be out of work. There isn't a lot of patience for someone who goes up to you and says, I'm really starting to worry about that 8-year-old who's making our jeans. But people are actually pushing back and saying, no, you don't know enough of the story. I do know that H&M and Abercrombie and Fitch, whoever thought that we'd be talking about them like they were good guys, and Calvin Klein and all those other companies can give you a good reason why they signed it. None of these other companies that refused to sign it have given you any reason at all.
They believe in the free market. They believe in deregulation. Companies, they'll take care of the police themselves, Pat.
Police themselves. That's all we're asking. Sign
well,
the agreement.
Will. We don't need
sign
the agreement. We'll do it ourselves.
Tomorrow morning
as well
at 11
as we've
a.m.
Done now.
Tomorrow morning at the 11 a.m. Everyone in the sound of our voice. That means all you people who are listening in Bangladesh, and hopefully there are some because you were interviewing people there. You can either join us at the Capitol, right here behind the building, where hopefully it's not as warm as it is right now in the building. Join us at the Capitol, and we're going to go to these retailers, these power retailers, Macy's and Sears and JCPenney and Walmart and Target and Kohl's, and we're going to hand out the list of, oh, them, to places at these different retailers till we get thrown out. We're just doing it till we get thrown out. We're not going to do it till we get in any more trouble than that.
And we will.
Oh, yeah. It won't take long
won't
either.
Take long.
But luckily, there are 15 locations we can go to. We're going to go to the Facebook page, go to the Rick Smith Facebook page. You can see the list of shops. Either do it in your town, do it in your locale, or join us here in Harrisburg. We're going to be meeting up over in Harrisburg, and you can join us. Or you can email Brett. Brett is the producer at TheRickSmithShow.com, and Brett will tell you where to meet us. But we're not advertising it because they're going to throw us out.
And they will.
And they will. We want to last 90 seconds, so we don't want them to know we're coming.
We've got information to share with others, and we're going to make sure that tomorrow we do that.
Right.
And the day after and the day after.
And in the meantime, we're going to join hands, sing Kumbaya, and wait for the president to do what he should do for the people of fast food nation in the middle of the Smithsonian.
That's just mind-blowing to me. And you look at this, and you know, the very first thing I said when President Obama took office is my only hope for him was that he would be the guy who saved the reward of work in this country. Because I think once you have empowerment on the job, and you know, I talked about passing the Employee Free Choice Act, because I'm a firm believer, and once you have empowerment on the job, you can take a day off occasionally. You're not worried that you're going to fall off the treadmill. That then you can get involved in everything else. You can be involved in everything else in your
That's
community.
That's what they're afraid of.
And that is what they're afraid of. That people are they're going to lift their eyes up from looking down on the treadmill, just trying to keep up like the rat in the hamster cage. And we're going to realize that the country that we have grown up in has completely changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the very wealthy, they have taken us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s. And I'm not talking about the 1980s and 90s.
But people I love and respect are in denial about this. I mean, people are commenting on this saying it's not possible that these things are happening to us. That's just plain denial. And that's the kind of denial you have the luxury of having if you make more than $40,000 a year.
And the sad reality is when we come back, we're going to talk about this new scorecard out from the women, the Wider Opportunities for Women group, WOW, who's given the state of Pennsylvania not a glowing grade in how they treat families. You're going to want to stick around for this. Quick break. Right back. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're a proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
The world's only recorded dinosaur stampede wasn't a stampede, according to Australian paleontologists.
Anthony Romilio at the University of Queensland led a study of fossilized tracks at the Dinosaur Stampede National Monument at Lark Quarry Conservation Park in Australia. He said the study suggests that the tracks were made by swimming, not running, dinosaurs. Romilio said that many of the tracks appear as elongated grooves. He thinks they were probably formed when the claws of swimming dinosaurs scratched the river bottom.
There are 4,000 dinosaur tracks at Lark Quarry, thought to be 95 million to 98 million years old. They were first discovered in the 1960s and are preserved in beds of siltstone and sandstone. It was thought that a shallow river once flowed here, when this area was part of a vast, forested floodplain.
It was believed that a group of perhaps 180 small dinosaurs of two different species were disrupted when a much larger carnivorous dinosaur arrived. The small dinosaurs were thought to have stampeded, leaving thousands of footprints in the surrounding mudflat.
Anthony Romilio said the tracks were made by just one dinosaur species, small, two-legged, plant-eating dinosaurs. He said the footprints were probably made over a period of several days by dinosaurs crossing the water. And he said the dinosaurs were swimming to cross the river, not stampeding. He published his research in the January 2013 issue of the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org. Earth.
In a few moments, I will sign the North American Free Trade Act into law. The environmental and labor side agreements negotiated by our administration will make this agreement a force for social progress as well as economic growth.
We don't get fooled again. Change, all right. Now, lots of change, not so much in the good way either. You look at all of the, and this is where Ross Perot, as crazy as he was, big floppy ears and all, was flat right, was dead right. Giant second sound. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your program. Pat, the Wider Opportunities for Women scorecard is out. Take a guess where Pennsylvania has ranked. A, B, C, D.
Oh, so it's like a rank card?
Yeah. Like, what's your scorecard?
I'd say C plus.
C minus.
Oh.
C minus. Now, what they've done is they've gone and they've said, you know, states that did well, they had, strong earned income tax credit law. They had good family and medical leave, public education, a little savings, a little money in the pocket, a little savings account, stuff like that, support for, child care, health care, housing, stuff like that. A lot of subsidies. Understand.
Isn't it funny that those are women's issues?
Exactly. And what they're saying is, you look at, the federal poverty line for a family of four is about 23.5. And what this report is saying is that, most families – need somewhere in the neighborhood of $60,000 a year to get by. When you take into account, you know, housing and food and clothing and all of that stuff, transportation, all of that stuff. And they go through and they rate, you know, which states did well. And the states that did poorly, the ones that, you know, did poorly are the states that had lower minimum wages. They had no sick days. They had no worker flexibility stuff. And the big one, they had lower unemployment insurance compensation. And you look at what our governor and the Republicans in this state have done to unemployment over the last couple of years, freezing it for the next 10 years. Now, it's going to be completely eroded by inflation over the next 10 years. And freezing it to, well, 2 years ago is a top rate. And also, the part that I love is that we, the taxpayers, took on about a $4 billion bond to bail out the employers who have defunded unemployment compensation over the last 26 years. And in the process of taking on that massive bailout, you and I, the taxpayer, how wonderful we are, we actually gave them a tax break. So there was a system that was set up where the employers weren't paying, because you and me, when we work for a living, we pay out every single dime we make into the unemployment insurance fund. The employers, not so much. In fact, it was they would pay on the first $8,000. Well, now it's going to go up over the next 10 years up to $10,000, and then they cut the rate in half.
Oh, my gosh.
So we've given them a massive tax break, and if we have another collapse like we did in 2008, we are totally screwed. Because the only thing that stopped this nation from being full-blown depression is the elasticity programs like food stamps, like unemployment insurance, those programs that, oh, I don't know, kept food on the table and people in their homes?
Well, not well. Some.
Well, but, you know,
here's some people in their homes. I mean, it's still, we had so
without
much.
Without them?
Absolutely.
We're right back. It's depression time.
Right.
And what blows my mind, Pat, is you've got these people who say, wow, you know, that food stamp, that's lazy people. I like this representative from Tennessee, Stephen Fincher. Who said, you've got to love the Bible, quote the Bible. You know, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat, according to Mr. Fincher. Quoting scripture. Says the role of a citizen, of Christians, he says, of humanity, is to take care of each other, but not for Washington to steal from those in this country and give to others.
You know, that's exactly what Jesus said when they told him they needed loaves and fishes. What, 5,000 people? You want me to feed them a bunch of loafers?
Wine,
lady,
too?
Good for nothing? That was a different one.
Wine, too?
That was another event where he turned the water into wine. But, yeah, no. I mean,
he only did that because he needed campaign contributions. Got him drunk and got him writing the checks. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm telling you what, if I met a politician who could make water into wine, he would have my vote.
Yeah, but here's the thing that gets me. I mean, you listen to that message. So what you're saying is feeding hungry people, feeding poor people is stealing. But, and this is where the story does that whole twist. Because you want to talk about welfare queen. You want to talk about thieving, no good for bleepity, all down the road. Mr. Fincher has taken almost $3.5 million in farm subsidies from 99 to 2012, making him one of Tennessee's largest welfare kings, one of the largest subsidy recipients in Tennessee's history. And he's not even the number one guy in Congress who's lining his pockets with farm subsidy money. And you go, You go, this guy has taken $3.8 million. Over this 13-year span, where the average SNAP benefit in the state of Tennessee is just over $1,500 a year.
Yeah.
And you go, explain to me, because I'm missing something here. Explain to me how feeding hungry poor people is stealing, but lining your pockets, that's just a good day at the office.
He also gets, in addition to the cash he gets, that money he gets, those subsidies, he gets to hire 10-year-olds. And they don't have to go to school. There is no child labor law for farm workers.
Well, they need to learn a hobby. They need to learn how to do something.
Picking tobacco is a hobby? I mean, this is dangerous work.
They would just be on the streets doing nothing, causing mischief. You know, like playing.
This is like being trapped in a room with Stephen Colbert.
But, you know, isn't that what they tell us? You know, Newt Gingrich.
They keep playing,
put those
yeah.
kids to work cleaning toilets. Get rid of that union janitor and get that kid to do the job. I mean, this is the Republican worldview.
But in the case of agriculture workers, they have already done it.
Well, they've always done it.
I know, but people don't know that. This is like the guy who can't get through his mind, the fact that Macy's is still having clothes made in a place where people died. You know, it's people are making other people's children, little children whose bones aren't finished yet. They're making them pick your strawberries.
It makes them more pliable. They get underneath the plant easier.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
That's just because you're one of those hippie liberal
I
types.
Am. I, you know what?
You
I have
care.
A flinty heart.
How dare you care?
I don't care about some people. They all happen to be those other welfare chiefs, the corporate welfare chiefs you speak of. I even care about them. I would love it if they would smarten up. I would love it if they would all of a sudden realize that the Bible has to be read, if that's the book they choose to read, from beginning to end, and not just the selected passages. And by the way, I have a new set of 10 of commandments, and it's the 14 commandments. And there are commandments in there, like, you can't have sex with a child at the university. That's commandment number 11. Commandment number 12, 3 meals a day. Every kid gets 3 meals a day.
Oh, then you'll just make them fat and lazy.
What makes them fat is that they don't eat.
What makes them fat is that they eat the wrong things.
Right.
I mean, look, I grew up on the welfare diet. You know, and one of the things that we'll talk about in the next hour is, you know, what happens to the money that we give in food stamps. You know, I remember as a kid growing up, the cupboards were bare at the end of the month. You know, bare. I mean, and this is one of those things that I am eternally grateful for, that my kids will never have to look in, I hope, I never have to look into my kids' eyes as my mother did as when I was a kid and know that kid's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, I can't imagine that kind of, that hopelessness and that helplessness.
You told me a story when we were driving home last night that I'm going to out you for right now, if that's okay. And the only way you can do now is, like, cut my mic. But you told me that when you were a kid, people would steal your food.
Yeah.
Neighbors stole your food. You know what? What kind of neighborhood has people so hungry that they're stealing food from each other? This was such a commentary on the fact that this isn't a bunch of awful people. This is a bunch of hungry people. And when George W. Bush expanded the SNAP program, it was because he was afraid for his life, because he's a spawn off of that block named Barbara who doesn't care about the poor, and he figures if they get mad enough and hungry enough, they might actually storm the Bastille.
It's working well for them, though. It's working well. Got to take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
All around the city halls, I'm the Let It Shine. All around the city halls, I'm the Let It Shine.
The Chicago Teachers Union, SEIU, Unite Here, and community activists wrapped up 3 days of actions in a march for educational justice in Chicago on Monday. It's the latest in a community movement to save 54 schools from planned closings. Speaking at a rally Monday, this SEIU school employee said that the unions and community activists will press the city again on Wednesday to keep the schools open.
We're going to be there on May 22nd. We're going to continue to march today to call attention to this issue, because all of these parents are not only workers or parents. They have their children in these schools. It's not right. And we want Mayor Rahm Emanuel to listen to the community and to listen to the workers and, more importantly, listen to the children.
Recently re-elected Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis says the protests are not only against school closings, but also against what she calls misguided corporate school reforms. The unions are also mobilizing politically against Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Chicago is a people's town. Get down! Chicago is a people's town.
All five University of California medical centers are seeing strike action today as healthcare workers walk off the job to demand fair pay, retirement security, and increased patient safety. Jesse Russell reports.
As many as 30,000 nurses and technical workers are expected to be off the job and walking the picket lines. The workers calling the strike are members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. But other unions that represent UC medical employees are also expected to respect the strike line. One of the primary issues of the workers has been the increased request for concessions by the workers, while executives continue to watch their salaries grow year over year. The unions and management have agreed that key personnel shall stay on the job during the strike to ensure the safety of patients. Last week, the university canceled all elective surgical procedures. The union has been in contract talks with management for nearly a year. 2 weeks ago, 97% of voting AFSCME workers authorized the union to call a strike as leverage in contract negotiations.
Hundreds of low-wage workers in Washington, D.C. employed under federal contracts, concessions, and leases are striking today. The workers at Ronald Reagan and old post office buildings, the Smithsonian Museums, and Union Station are all calling on President Obama to guarantee a living wage and a voice on the job. The workers have formed Good Jobs Nation, an organization to ensure private contractors pay living wages and improve working conditions for all workers employed by federal dollars. Tuesday's strike follows actions by low-wage workers in Detroit, Milwaukee, New York, St. Louis, and Chicago. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fox News alert, it's election day, and we got some new video we just showed you of a member of the new Black Panther Party standing guard outside a polling place in Philadelphia.
I wonder what he's doing. What's the black guy doing? What's he doing there? Oh, he's opening the door for a little old lady. Yeah, they were really hoping he was going to hit her with a club, I think. I mean, if you listen to the voice, kind of what it sounded like, wasn't it? There's a member of the new Black Panther Party. What's he doing? Ah, he's opening the door, being a gentleman. Blows the mind. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. It is Election Day, and, well, a good friend of the program and a good friend of mine, Roxanne Pauline, she won today. Roxanne, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you.
Congrats.
We're very happy here. We've won the primary, and I was running for mayor of Taylor, Pennsylvania, and we're one step closer to taking over this community and making it one in a great movement with Democrats all over northeastern Pennsylvania.
And for me, you know, one of the things that I say, Roxanne, is you work to change your little corner of the world, and, well, that's how you change the world, and congratulations tonight as you begin that march to changing your little piece of the world.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a long haul. I announced very early in January, so we've been working at it. And we have some good competition, and I think we're going to be able to take it. Regardless of any fact, though, the movement will continue, and we're going to prevail in making everybody accountable, getting out there, voting, participating, and being part of the process.
And in activating and engaging people. And one of the things that as I followed your campaign that I found most interesting and I got to be honest, fascinating, is your ability to bring people together and get folks out in the streets and energized and activated and motivated. And I think that speaks volumes about you.
Well, we had a lot of help. A lot of union people have helped me. SEIU Healthcare PA was very strong here in my corner. We ran a real GOTV campaign, a real walking campaign. We've done everything by the book, which was for the first time in this community, there was an actual real functioning campaign. And most of the people never saw it, and they were looking at us going, what are you people doing? Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're doing a campaign. And we did, and it proved effective that we drew people out to the polls and knew exactly what our numbers would be. And it is a science. There is a science to this.
Well, congratulations. So tomorrow the campaign begins anew.
Yes, it does. We start our strategy session and figure it out. We have a couple of months, and we'll make it happen. And it's fun. People don't realize that politics can be a good time for everybody. You come together as a team. You work as a team. Everybody covers each other. And it can be a lot of fun. And, you know, we're enjoying it now. I never planned this. This was not something I ever perceived I'd be doing in my life. But here we are, and we'll move on to the next step. And it's all for the movement.
And good for you, because, you know, my wife told me I'm not allowed to run for any political office. Because, you know, I got to be honest, I give people credit who are willing to step forward and say, I'm going to do it.
And I've done a lot of things in my life. I've had a lot of different careers. So, you know, it's not an easy move, but you throw your hat in the ring and just say, go. What is the worst thing that's going to happen to you?
Yeah. So what's the vision? What's the vision for your community? How do you change the world?
One person at a time.
So what's the vision?
One person at a time.
So what's the vision for Taylor?
Vision for the world is, you know, hey, the Miss America speech, love, peace, and happiness. But we're far away from that at this point, and I'd be happy just to get the community growing, get the Democratic parties together, get the Republicans speaking to the Democrats, get Harrisburg working, and get D.C. out of the deep doo-doo that they're in all the time.
So as you're out knocking on doors, kissing babies and all that, what was the sentiment of the people that you came across?
Seniors, I was very surprised in this community. Didn't talk to me about Medicare, Medicaid, or all of the things that they
talked about.
They talked to me about wanting a place to eat, like a country buffet or some kind of place that they can go to have mashed potatoes and gravy, which I thought was very interesting.
Is old country buffets lobby working with the senior centers?
No, I don't think they have. You know, we're going to do our best to see if we can find a small business that's willing to open up something similar. Since I'm not in love with franchises and the amount of money that they pay their wait staff and their people. And, you know, you have SEIU working on that dramatically all over the country. So hopefully we'll be able to, you know, provide them with something. They seem pretty educated about Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security and what's going on. So that was one thing I did learn that kind of, I went, oh, okay, I wasn't expecting that.
Give the people what they want, Roxy.
And you know what? It is all about people. I'm a vessel. I'm a voice. And if they need to protest something, I'll teach them how.
That's what I love.
You know,
about
if they don't think something's right and city council thinks that they want to do it their way, I'll teach them how to get their voice heard.
I gotta be honest. I give the good people of Taylor all the credit in the world because they saw a gem and they voted for her, and hopefully you'll move on to the next level. We love you here, Rox, and nothing but the best.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it, and I love you guys too.
Thanks so much. You know, I look at this, Pat, and you know, this is one of those things that I say. You know, I give people credit who are willing to step up, and I know you've run for office a couple of times. This is one of those things I give people credit for because it's a firing squad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to say that. I don't really mind the arrows I took in the front. It was the ones in the back that hurt, you know, because even the people you're trying to stick up for have a million reasons why you didn't do it quite well enough, you know. But at the end of the day, you have to talk about the things that matter to you. What I thought was interesting was the first time I ever ran for office was 1998. And I had two little kids, and I talked about things like daycare and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Last time I ran for office was 2006, and I talked about college loans. And, you know, and you really need people from every walk of life to run for office. We should have daycare for legislators so that young people can run for office, and they can bring their kids to work with them. And if they have to do 24-hour sessions during a certain part of the budget or something, daycare should be provided the whole time that they're there. And then just take the payment for daycare out of the senators or representatives' wages. And make it so that a young mom can run for office. Make it so that we can have people with different perspectives, not just a whole pile of tired old suits and you know, God love real estate agents, but there aren't very many people who can structure their lifestyle around being a representative, at least a representative on the state level.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting that you brought that up because, you know, going back to our food stamp discussion, there's a senator from Connecticut a guy named Chris Murphy, who has taken the SNAP challenge. And I've done this in the past. He's saying $3 per day on food stamps, and he's going to try and live on this for a week. And while I give ultimate credit, for someone who says I'm gonna step up and I'm gonna see what it's like, you really don't know what it's like.
Well, because you can stop. When I lived in homeless shelters,
at the end
it was
of the
same
week.
Thing. Yeah, or you can stop Tuesday. You tried it Monday, it sucked. Tuesday got pretty bad, so you went out to dinner with your buddies and you tried again Wednesday. But you can stop, and as long as you can stop, you don't know. But that said, they should still all do it.
Oh, absolutely. But, for me, I look at this, and the reason that I bring that up, Pat, is because, for a week, anyone can do that. And you might be okay. But they've come out with some interesting numbers that I find.
$3 a day.
No, $3 a day. Mm-hmm. They have found that, 59% of the people who get SNAP benefits are out of it by the end of the seventh day. 80% of the SNAP benefits by half of the month,
gone.
Food's gone.
Yeah.
90% by the 21st day, 97% by the end of the month. And I got to be honest with you, I remember as a kid, you would go to the cupboards at the end of the month, a couple of days, there's the mice are going, hey, where's the food?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing. And, I look at Murphy and I say, hey, good for you. Maybe you get a touch of what it's like. Try it for a month, though.
Well, I think the good thing about people like him doing it is he's already an elected official. He might set somebody back. At least the media reported. You knew about it. The thing about people doing these things is so that people will all sit around and go, $3 a day. Except for, oh, by the way, the 15% of the people are trying to live that way. That's the other thing. When people talk about the poor, they act like the poor aren't listening. 15 to 25% of who's listening to you right now are living that way.
Are struggling, sure.
And so people talk about the... I'm sorry, that's my bracelet making all kinds of noise. I'm shivering, it's so cold in here. I'm channeling thought processes about being warm.
There you go.
But people really need to know that that's happening. And, I really wish in so many ways that so many people would do it and not just... political leaders, but CEOs. How about a couple of hospital presidents or hospital CEOs actually staying for a week on the children's floor and seeing what it's like for a little kid who's got to come and go and their parents and what that sort of agony is like? How about people walking a mile in somebody else's moccasins? Are people so afraid of being hokey that they can't admit that the definition of hokey is living the crap life of somebody else?
No, you want to look. I've been there. I hope my kids never see. And my wife and I have talked about this. The reason I waited until I was 35 to have kids is, I wanted to make sure that my kids never saw the poverty, the violence, the despair, all of that I grew up under. And you go, oh wow, you're just you're playing the violin. And the reality is, no, I'm not playing the violin. And look, I've been there. I've seen this. And no one in this country, the wealthiest country on the planet, should have to go through that. No one.
But the hard thing is a whole pile of cantankerous old butt scratchers right now are saying, yep, that's why those people shouldn't be having kids. They aren't all thinking like Rick Smith. They didn't wait till they were 35. They had a baby at 18.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you also made it impossible for them to get birth control.
But here's the thing, and it's interesting you bring that up, because my mother made very clear very early on that you don't do that, because obviously she was 16 when she had me, a mistake. Look, at the end of it, she wanted to make sure that I didn't make that same mistake.
And that's
the
great.
Sad thing is,
you don't
get that everywhere.
No, but I was just going to say that's great if somebody's come to that conclusion. But when the only person some people have that loves them is the one they gave birth to, then to have them turn around and say, the only person that was ever really good to me, I don't want you to have one. I mean, we're all thinking this incredible middle class sort of preachy crap where we're supposed to know better. Well, you know what? Sometimes people's lives suck so bad that the idea, and they don't have a rite of passage. They're not going to college. They're not even dreaming of it. They think about it like I love saying things like one of my ex-husbands. One of my ex-husbands said to me one time, of course people go to the Olympics. I'm not going to the Olympics. I'm not going to the Olympics. That's the way he felt about college.
Well, look, I've told people a number of times. I think it was about 15 before I realized you went to college to get an education. I thought that's where you went to play basketball or football, because those were the only people in my community I ever saw get to college. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
And the kids locked in the Capitol are fighting till the end. And we're not gonna break tonight. And we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town. All down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we bear.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pscu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
Stock market soars, exulted a typical headline in early May when the Dow Jones average topped 15,000. But this index of Wall Street wealth gives a false picture of our nation's true economic health. Yes, the privileged few are doing extremely well. But the workaday many are struggling and falling further and further behind as the jobs market sinks steadily from mere recession down into depression. The monthly unemployment reports don't tell the depths of misery out here in the real world beyond the view of Wall Street and Washington elites. For example, President Obama hailed the news that unemployment dipped to 7.5% in April. Unstated, though, was the stark reality that this good news dip was not due to a jump in job offerings, but to a bad news labor market so weak and discouraging that Americans are dropping out of it or never entering it. More than a third of our working age population is no longer even in the job market, and only 58.6% of us are employed. Put the opposite way, 41% of the potential workforce is not working, about 102 million people. One more statistic, and it's a chiller. More than 1 out of 5 American families report that last year, not a single family member had a job. Our people are trapped in a jobs crisis that's sucking the economic vitality out of our nation, but our leaders even refuse to acknowledge it. In fact, corporate chieftains deliberately exacerbate the crisis by hoarding trillions of dollars that ought to be rushed into job-creating expansions. And politicians add to the casualties by gleefully firing hundreds of thousands of teachers, firefighters, and other valuable public employees. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's middle class is burning to the ground, while Washington fiddles with nonsense and Wall Street feathers its own nest. It's disgraceful.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The way to meet the challenge of energy and global climate change is through technology. And the United States is in the lead. The world is on the verge of great breakthroughs that will help us become better stewards of the environment.
Yes, yeah, I miss the shrub. I got to tell you, I miss George Bush. I really do. I mean, there's not a better comic genius on the planet. There's a guy who, you know, There's a guy who said, it was one liner after another.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
I mean, you can't make that stuff up. You just can't do it.
Well, you know, he obviously knows that he was comic relief, which is why he's vanished. I mean, Rumsfeld and that horrible, hateful guy who beat me, Dick Cheney, losing to a man who shoots his friend in the face can really hurt a girl's feelings, by the way.
My thought on it is he was with his mistress.
I think he was just drunk.
I think he was drunk. I think if you're drunk, you don't wait all that time. I think that he had something on the side. And
I hope to God if he
and
has
it was
a
probably a guy.
I hope to God if he has a mistress, male or female, that she was drunk. Please, boy, I hope she was drunk blind. Anyway, but Rumsfeld and Cheney are actually weighing in on Benghazi and stuff. They're actually talking about people lying. I've never seen such hypocrisy in my time. But George W., just silent.
Yep.
Just because Cheney's hand is no longer up his butt and moving his little puppet arms.
Have you noticed he hasn't cleared any brush lately?
Photo op time is over.
Do you remember that? You know, the whole big belt buckle thing, the whole stupid hillbilly cowboy thing.
Oh, yeah.
That swaggering idiot routine that he used to play.
Oh, yeah.
Because I used to work with a guy, and I used to say, yeah, I know, you sit in front of the TV, and you go, yeah, look, Mo, he's stupid like me. No, he's smarter than you. He's rich. You're working for $12 an hour and barely able to get by on that.
I got to tell you, though, I've met Jeb, right? Jeb really is the brains of the family.
Of course.
I love that old joke, though. I can't remember who said it. Is you know that the family's in trouble when the smart one is named Jeb.
But, are you making a Beverly Hillbillies joke funny?
I don't know. He's huge, though.
He's a big guy.
He makes you look like a peanut.
He's a big guy.
Chai guy. Yeah. Anyway, but
is he Chris Christie or?
No, he's tall. He's tall. Yeah, he's a big, tall guy. He's not skinny because he'd disappear. He's not a stick man, but he's proportional. Okay. But I really believe that, first of all, how, why, and to every Republican who's upset right now at Obama, I have one thing to say. Romney. That's the best you can do. And you know what? Impeach him. You're going to have Biden, and then Biden will get two terms because you have Romney. And the only person who is upset that Biden is president is Hillary, who really is going to be getting sick of a short stick, right? But
is that a Bill comment?
I bet not. I'm thinking that's ample. But
I don't even know where to go with that.
Yeah, he's an impressive fella.
He can speak. I'll give him that.
I may not like
all the things he says, but he can speak.
Yeah, he's on the stature size of Jeb Bush.
Like they said about Colin Powell, he speaks so well.
Like he's not supposed to? I know. He also pulls people out of crashed helicopters well. And Dick Cheney had the nerve to call him a coward.
No, what did Bush call him? Balloon foot.
Balloon foot?
Yeah, evidently he had, during Vietnam, he had stepped on one of the punji sticks.
They made fun of him?
They made fun of him. Bush called Rove called him Turd Blossom.
Well, Rove is a Turd Blossom.
No, but I'm just saying, he had a little cute little pet name for everyone, and Balloon Foot was Colin Powell's.
So you got a maniacal creature from some god-awful mix of evil DNA who's called Turd Blossom, and that makes perfect sense. But you've got a war hero. I mean, whether you like Colin Powell or not, the guy is courageous, and what he did in Vietnam and Korea, no matter what you think of those wars, he was courageous and amazing, and he's been totally bamboozled and swindled by
sent to the UN with a cartoon picture, sure.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's not a Colin Powell fan because of Milai.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother...
Yeah, well, that's a good reason not to be a fan.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother point.
And I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just saying, can you imagine taking orders from George Bush?
Yeah,
when you really need to turn him into a little spot You know? Just flick him in the head. You know who else I couldn't believe? Was McCain, when he sucked up to him.
I lost all respect. I wrote a
column and asked everyone to send a can of tomato juice to John McCain.
To get the stink off.
Yeah.
Him. Yeah.
It had to stink so bad to be next to that man. After he...
That push poll in South Carolina.
Karl Rove did the thing in South Carolina where they said that his...
Would you vote for somebody with, you know, if he had black children?
With a mistress?
Yeah.
Instead of adopted the child with his... Those people are so awful. The man can't raise his arms because he was tortured for so long.
But what does that say about us that we would believe that? What does it say about us as a people that we would buy into this nonsense?
It says the same thing about us as a people when we don't believe Macy's is used in sweatshops. We believe what we want to believe.
Yeah.
You know?
Because we want to believe that, you know, the Norman Rockwell vision that we've been painted is completely accurate.
And this story that we were just talking about off air about ex-Ford executives... Three former Ford Motor Company executives were charged Tuesday with crimes against humanity. We're not talking dictators of a country. We're talking Ford Motor Company
We're talking
executives.
Dictators of a corporation.
Crimes against humanity for allegedly targeting Argentine union workers, kidnapping them, torturing them. Took 40 years to bring these guys to justice. Oh, we don't want to believe that either. Oh, that stuff happened 40 years ago.
Well, they're still doing it in Colombia today. And we've got a free trade agreement with them.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, you know, what we do in the name of cheap products.
Why is making a Ford cheap worth torturing someone? Why is a $400 Nordstrom's bra worth a building caving in? Maybe braless. But this is too... Buy a bra. 27 cents probably to make that bra. Bras in Nordstrom's are hundreds of dollars.
You got to pay for the lights.
Oh, for God's sake.
And, you know, you've got to pay for those beautiful displays. And the mannequins with the busty.
The mannequins, busty. They don't even die. Well, maybe that's who they... Someday they'll have mannequins that can make you a bra.
There was a store somewhere that had live mannequins. Maybe we could be paying people to be live mannequins.
Well, as long as we keep them alive. Like you said, you have to be alive when you go to work and alive when you go home at the end of the day.
And I expect that when I go to work, that the place where I work is not going to crush me and collapse on me. And, you know, but here's the thing, and this is what, to bring this home to the U.S., and you go, well, that's Bangladesh. What do I care about Bangladesh? Well, yeah, except we've got 50, 60,000 people a year in this country who die from occupational illness that our government doesn't track. The insurance industry doesn't even track it. Because we don't want to know how many people are dying because of the exposure and because of the illnesses that they pick up while going to work every day. You know, all the coal miners with black lung, and there was a rally today in St. Louis against Patriot Coal, who is trying to steal the retirees' health care. You know, the people who... Black lung? Hello? Yeah. That there was actually a settlement, and all of this... This is how these corporations operate. They set up this Patriot Coal specifically to spin off these union members' health care. Because, what was it, I think 90% of the people who are in this plan never worked for Patriot Coal. They never worked for the company. But their health insurance is through the company, and they set this monstrosity up specifically to fail. Mm-hmm. So that, well, when it goes bankrupt, well, we can all write that off. Bankruptcy judges, because that went right off. You people screwed. And then you, the taxpayer, well, you're going to have to pick up the difference, which is what corporate America has done for years with pensions and with health care, because they've gotten away with it.
Absolutely. And the whole misinformation thing. If someone really believes the difference between the United States and Canadians' health care plans is that the Canadians have to wait in line. No one has ever tried to schedule health care in the United States where, oh, by the way, you don't get to go tomorrow. You're going to wait 6 weeks.
I had to wait a month.
By the way, you're in line.
Yep.
And they live longer. And they pay less. So the results are better. But all that aside, we're taught, and that Pat Robertson clip of yours is the perfect indication of it, we're taught that actually expecting a retirement is grabby. You just want too much. Expecting to be able to relax. It's not, can I work till I die? Sure you can. Whether or not you have a right to maybe spend an extra 5 weeks a year with your grandchildren.
Yep.
tell them the stories that you remember from when you were a kid so that we grow up with a civilization that just cares about each other.
Excellent point. Let's take a quick break right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I don't believe that God wants me to give my money to someone like you. But I do believe it's what a crazy man can do.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
The world's only recorded dinosaur stampede wasn't a stampede, according to Australian paleontologists.
Anthony Romilio at the University of Queensland led a study of fossilized tracks at the Dinosaur Stampede National Monument at Lark Quarry Conservation Park in Australia. He said the study suggests that the tracks were made by swimming, not running, dinosaurs. Romilio said that many of the tracks appear as elongated grooves. He thinks they were probably formed when the claws of swimming dinosaurs scratched the river bottom.
There are 4,000 dinosaur tracks at Lark Quarry, thought to be 95 million to 98 million years old. They were first discovered in the 1960s and are preserved in beds of siltstone and sandstone. It was said that a shallow river once flowed here when this area was part of a vast, forested floodplain.
It was believed that a group of perhaps 180 small dinosaurs of two different species were disrupted when a much larger carnivorous dinosaur arrived. The small dinosaurs were thought to have stampeded, leaving thousands of footprints in the surrounding mudflat.
Anthony Romilio said the tracks were made by just one dinosaur species, small, two-legged, plant-eating dinosaurs. He said the footprints were probably made over a period of several days by dinosaurs crossing the water. And he said the dinosaurs were swimming to cross the river, not stampeding. He published his research in the January 2013 issue of the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
In hindsight, the new strategy was flawed, complex, poorly reviewed, poorly executed, and poorly monitored. Just because we're stupid doesn't mean everybody else was. It is very unfortunate. It plays right into all the hands of a bunch of pundits out there, but that's life. We'll have to deal with that. Just because we're stupid doesn't mean everybody else was.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. So I wonder, you know, you look at today, the homeowners took to the streets to the Department of Justice in D.C., asking Attorney General Eric Holder to arrest the guy you just heard there, Jamie Dimon. Just because they're stupid doesn't mean we're stupid, too. One of the homeowners got tased. I wonder if it was Jamie Dimon. Because there would be a guy, you know, I'm generally not in favor of people being tased. I think there's a guy, I don't know that I would mind. Just a thought. Anyway, the folks today, and it just blows my mind that they would tase somebody for, well, saying, hey, would you arrest the criminal? One of the folks there today at the protest was Caitlin Crawford. She was in D.C., homeowner from St. Paul, Minnesota. Caitlin, thanks for taking time for me.
Pardon me?
Thanks for taking time for me. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for giving me a call.
So you were at the Department of Justice today where the homeowner was tased. It wasn't Jamie Dimon, was it?
It was clearly not Jamie Dimon. I think in that case we would have probably all been cheering a little bit.
I would have actually, you know, I'm not going there. I'm generally not death penalty fond, but, you know, you look at some of these criminals, what they've done to people's lives, and, you know, I can almost make a case for it. And, you know, to me, it's just mind-blowing that we've held none of them accountable, yet we're willing to tase a homeowner in the streets for saying, hey, I'd like to stay in my home, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what brought you to D.C.?
What part did I see?
What brought you to Washington, D.C.? What brought you from Minnesota to the Capitol?
Yeah, so about back in September, I launched a public pressure campaign around my house, and I got further negotiating with the banks in about 3 weeks working with Occupy Homes Minnesota than I did in about a year and a half with working through the justice system. And that really portrayed the importance to me of public pressure and really drawing attention to the crimes that these banks are doing. As one of the organizers, as a homeowner who's personally experienced what's going on, I felt like it was really important for me and other homeowners to take a stand against the line that the banks are too big to jail.
And for me, you know, the importance I think here is for folks like you to get out and tell your stories, to bring other people out, because I think there are millions of people who are in the same position you're in, and I think a lot of them feel ashamed that, you know, hey, I'm struggling and I don't want anybody to know. I'm of the mindset, the more people we get out in the streets, the more people we get going to the Department of Justice saying, hey, we want these criminals arrested, the better I think it's going to be for all of us.
Right, and absolutely. And our society is really good about creating a negative stigma around financial issues.
And punishing people. I mean, you know, I love the narrative that they came out with after the collapse and the housing bubble burst. That was, you know, it was those poor people. It was those people under the Community Reinvestment Act. It was those poor people who bought houses that they couldn't afford. They're the reason our economy crashed. And I'm going, really? Really? A couple of people who bought homes in the inner city that had a much higher return rate and a much higher repayment rate than, oh, those million-dollar homes in Florida? You mean those people crashed the economy, not you thieves on Wall Street?
Right. And in my case, I actually had equity in my house when they foreclosed. And I had made all my payments on time. I hadn't missed the payments until the bank told me to, so that I would qualify for a modification.
Here again, right back to what I've heard from homeowner after home. Hundreds of times we've had people come on this program and say, you know what, the bank told me I had to fall behind. You know, I was struggling, I knew I was going to struggle, but I was somehow eking it out, and they said, hey, fall behind. And then they came in, swooped up the house, and to me, I look at this as a criminal conspiracy. We should be holding these people accountable.
Yep, absolutely, and that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Because, you know,
this week in D.C.
Because, as you said, you had equity in your house, so they basically stole from you.
Absolutely, I owed $28,000 on my house when they foreclosed on me.
And what do you owe today?
They sold it back for $40,000.
Oh, you criminal! No good for nothing, scumbag people. And this is, you know, I go back to Mitt Romney, and I don't know what your political persuasion is, don't really care, but I go back to Romney during the campaign where he was talking about, you know, what we do with the foreclosure crisis. And I just want to get your thought real quick. Here's Romney during the campaign talking about foreclosures.
As to what to do for the housing industry specifically, and are there things that you can do to encourage housing? One is, don't try and stop the foreclosure process. Let it run its course and hit the bottom. Allow investors to buy homes, put renters in them, fix the homes up, and let it turn around and come back up. The Obama administration.
So his theory is, what we do is we take your house, we sell it to people like him, and then we rent it back to you. Which sounds like a lot like they did. They took your house, You owe 28 grand on it. They sold it back to you for 40. That is a great, that's capitalism at its best.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what that sound clip sounded like was, let's excuse these fraudulent foreclosures and these fraudulent practices that are going on and let them off the hook because the housing market will bounce back by itself.
But when you come to D.C. to say, hey, I got robbed, I got ripped off, top cop, go do something, they tase you.
Yep, clearly.
There's something seriously wrong there. At least I think there is.
I would hope most people think there is.
Because, the reality, Kaylin, is I could be you. Any of our listeners could be you. At any day, one of us could get sick, we could lose a job, whatever it is, and fall behind on our payments, and they could come steal our houses.
Yeah, I think Paul Wellstone from Minnesota actually was quoted saying, every single one of us is one pink slip away from losing our home.
So let me ask you, because, I can hear my right-wing friends, I can hear the wheels spinning. She must have taken on more than she could handle, and she was greedy and overreaching, and it's her fault, and she needs to be punished and all of that. How did you get into this mess?
I was actually injured in a snowboarding accident and was going to be out of work for about 3 months, and I knew that was the recovery time. I approached the bank before I was even behind on my payments.
Jeez.
And asked them if there was anything that they could do to help me in the meantime. If they would have said no, I would have kept making my payments. But instead, they said, yeah, absolutely, we can help you, but you have to be in default first. So stop paying your mortgage, and then we'll modify your loan for you. And it's a story that I hear over and over and over again now working with homeowners. And that's what, instead of modifying my loan, and instead of modifying these loans, they go straight into foreclosure and go forward with the foreclosure proceedings. And then you just go, oh, our hands are tied. We can't do anything because you're already in foreclosure proceedings.
Oh, man, I'd be fit to be tied. I mean, I would be beyond myself. I think I'd be in jail. I think that's where I would end up with all of this.
Well, there were 28.
So it's probably a good thing most of these people were nowhere near St. Paul. Who knows where their call centers are? Because to me, and this is one of these things that I think is very important, Kaylin, to me, this is why we need to break up these too big to fail banks. I think they're too big to exist. In North Dakota, for instance, they actually have a state-run bank. The Bank of North Dakota is their bank. It's owned by the state. They didn't have, or actually owned by the people, they didn't have these problems because when you got into trouble, when you got injured and you said, hey, for a couple of months, I'm going to be laid up, I'm not going to have money, you would go to the bank, who the bank president probably wrote you the loan, was holding on to it, says, okay, we'll work together, we'll figure it out. When you've got these massive institutional banks who only care about how much they can extract from you, you set up situations like this, and I got to be honest, I don't want that in my society.
Right. I don't think any of us do. I mean, these foreclosures have such a huge impact on all of our society. They impact the schools. The schools don't get the property tax money. They impact the children who don't have a stable living situation while they're going through school. They, it just snowballs.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. From here, you have this day of action. Are people still camped out tonight?
We had a bunch of our arrestees actually get kicked out of jail we had a few people using aliases and being in jail under the name of bankers. So we had John Stumpf in jail. We also had Jamie Dimon in jail, and they were actually released and not charged with anything.
Nice, nice.
And
that sends a clear message.
Yeah, and so after that, we took the opportunity to declare that as a victory, that clearly the judge thought that there was no reason to charge these people for what they were doing as protesters, and we had a victory celebration and wrapped up our stuff, and we are having another rally tomorrow morning at Freedom Plaza.
Good for you. And from this point, when you break out of this, what's the next What's the next move? Where do you, when you go back to your home community, what do you hope to take from this? What's the marching order from there?
I think this really just shows the power of organizing, and I'm excited to bring back the networks that I've built and the people that I've met and the leadership skills that I've learned this week, and bring that back to my community to keep fighting.
You know, I happen to watch this movie, and I've cited it a couple of times. And if you have an hour and a half or so, it's well worth the watch. It's called Salt of the Earth. It was about the 1950s. There was a mining strike in New Mexico. And at the end of the movie, the miner who was the head of the strike, they were going to evict him from the company town, and they had the sheriff and his goons come out and throw this guy's stuff, his family's stuff, out onto the front lawn there. And
wow.
The entire community... imagine this is going on back in the 40s and 50s. The entire community of this company town came out, and as the sheriff and his goons were taking stuff out of the house, all of these people were taking it and putting it back. And I'm of the mindset that's what we need to be doing as a community. We need to be saying, you know what, we're not going to let Kaylin lose her home. We're not going to let the woman we spoke to last night lose her home, or any of the hundreds of people we've talked to lose their home. We're going to protect them. We're going to stand together as a community against people like Jamie Dimon.
That's beautiful. And actually, the woman you spoke with last night lives about 3 blocks down the road from me. And in Minnesota, and
without this, you'd have probably never met each other.
No, we met each other. Yeah, well, without the foreclosure crisis, we would not have probably met each other. But we met each other when we were actually testifying at the Capitol, Minnesota State Capitol, on behalf of the Homeowners Bill of Rights, which actually just passed our House and Senate on Monday.
Which I think is fantastic and should pass every state house. And I wish these idiots here at the Pennsylvania General Assembly would take something like that up instead of all the attacks on workers and on the poor and on education and on health and safety and on our roads and bridges and on everything else that they've neglected while they go after their nonsensical, idiotic, ideological policies of privatizing everything and giving our assets away. But that's a whole nother rant for another day. Kaylin, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for what you're doing.
I appreciate it. I hope you'll come back again with more stories of success. Kaylin Crawford, thanks so much. You know, I look at this and, look, it's about coming together. It's about organizing. It's about doing what we're doing tomorrow. Out in the streets, getting to the Walmarts, into the Targets, into the Macy's, and information activation engagement. That's what we need to be doing. Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
About the deficit, we want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized, and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8-hour hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terrorist bomb and the blazing guns of company-paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Mode was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Let my daddy come on, Neil, how it works when he came home from World War II. Now the art's just scrapping rubber. He said them big boys did whatever good it did. Yeah, these mills, they built the tanks and bombs that won this country's war. We sent our sons to Korea and Vietnam. Now we're wondering what they were dying for.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, the podcast is there at the website, or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. So you remember when Governor Corbett had, you know, had his drug comment?
There are many employers that say, you know, we're looking for people, but we can't find anybody that has passed the drug test, a lot of them. And that's a concern for me, because we're having a serious problem.
And that was, you know, just recently, when he was running for governor, Pat, he said that, you know, they're just lazy people.
He needs to be tased when he lies. That is a moment.
Dog collar, right?
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, you broke the gate. You can't find any?
No, none.
They're on drugs?
None. All of them are on drugs, and they're all lazy, which I find interesting since last Friday.
I'll tell you, it's not that easy to get drugs. You can't be lazy.
Well, there you go. On Friday, though, and this kind of flies in the face of this. Can't find a person to pass drug tests. They're all lazy. No job applicants, Pat. Nobody. There's just no one. We can't find anyone. Except the city of Philadelphia held its third annual ex-offenders job fair. Now, the first year they had done it, about 1,000 people showed up. Last year, 100 people showed up. This year, 4,000 people showed up.
Wow.
In fact, they had to close it down because they didn't have enough space. They're going to do it in the future, hoping that, you know, people can't find it. They're going to try and get the convention center bigger place to have more people, because there are so many lazy and drug addict people who just won't take these jobs. Some 4,000 ex-offenders showing up. And now, look, I'm not sure where you go with this. I've always been of the mindset, if you've paid your debt to society, you've paid your debt to society.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I want to give employers more tax credits and tax breaks, but I kind of understand it. This idea of, you know, we need to help people recover, and this whole idea of rehabilitation that I agree with instead of retribution.
See, I actually have a philosophical problem with this, and that's the fact that these are actually ex-offenders who paid for their crimes.
Right.
And it's the ex-offenders who haven't been charged yet that run the big corporations and Wall Street and everything. They're still offenders. They just haven't been found guilty. They haven't done their time. Send those guys to jail and give the ex-offenders who actually have paid their dues their jobs.
And their vote back.
Yeah, there you go. You Halliburton dudes who, you know, lied about all kinds of stuff, you're going to lose your job, and in comes these ex-offenders who probably their only crime was a little reefer, as they say.
But they're lazy. Didn't you know they're lazy?
much maligned people who nobody actually ever, well, not nobody, but the people who are making these comments don't have them, aren't qualified to make them, and don't have the qualifications necessary to elucidate on what they're talking about. The one that I've got now is, do you see the latest news out of Oklahoma?
Which one?
The one about the school that got hit by the tornado?
Yeah, where the teachers were...
The teachers were shielding the children with their bodies.
The union teachers? Those greedy, selfish union teachers?
One woman who... they don't know if she's going to make it, but she was protecting three children under her body when the roof was pulled off of her school.
Yeah. Yeah, those greedy teachers.
They get overpaid, you know.
Yeah.
If she wasn't paid so well... What? I mean, and where's the town where they fired the teachers who offered, and then the
Buena Vista
offered to work for free?
Buena Vista, Michigan. The Buena Vista School District there in Michigan. In fact, we had a representative from that school district, you know, not too long ago talking about it. They literally were willing to work for free, and they said, no, we're closing it down. Because it's ideology. You know, the idea is they've created this system that they can destroy.
Absolutely.
And the state, you know, much like Pennsylvania, run by ideologues, they want to destroy public education because it's a cash cow. You know, if you can get a kid that you're spending $8,000 or $10,000 per pupil on and spend $3,000 to educate them, hey, that's big profit.
Think of how brilliant this scheme is, though. I mean, it's just like the insurance scheme in the United States. You don't have to get a person to death if you're an insurance company. You only have to get them to
Medicare.
65, right?
Give them the Medicare.
What a brilliant scheme. Now, if you can privatize education, you won't have to educate the poor ones. You won't have to educate the challenged ones. You can just not take them.
That's right.
So how much easier does that get?
Thomas Jefferson. I covered the plot. and it, you know, the thing is they're not trying to hide it. That's the part that gets me.
They're not trying to hide it because we don't believe it. We've got a story about 15 companies that won't, you know what they won't sign on for in that Bangladesh Accord? They won't pony up $500,000 to have the stuff made there.
Well, no,
they would have to put $500,000 into the kitty to make sure the workplace is safe.
The buildings don't fall down.
And don't catch fire. They don't want to put the $500,000 in. You know what they did in the Netherlands? They passed a law that said if you want to hire people outside our country and pay them 25 cents an hour, that's fine. But everyone who would have worked till retirement age, you have to keep paying. Nobody left the country. No companies left the country. They're like, wait a minute, I get this worker for 25 cents an hour, but I'm still paying him $18.50? Okay, I'll stay.
That's smart policy.
It's the wealthiest.
And that's not the free market. That's not competition.
It's the wealthiest country in Europe. It's working.
That's not the free market. You're bastardizing capitalism.
Thank God somebody is. Bastardized capitalism. It's about time.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Of course, if you're missing any part of the program, the podcast is there for your entertainment, your enjoyment, your pleasure. Or Stitcher on your smartphone. Again, tomorrow, 11 o'clock, Capitol Steps. We are going to be out to begin our education of the public about what's going on in Bangladesh and the companies who have refused to sign on to safe working conditions. Quick break, right back with hour three.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
All around our city halls, I'm gonna let it shine. All around our city halls, I'm gonna let it shine.
The Chicago Teachers Union, SEIU, Unite Here, and community activists wrapped up 3 days of actions in a march for educational justice in Chicago on Monday.
It's the latest in a community movement to save 54 schools from planned closings. Speaking at a rally Monday, this SEIU school employee said that the unions and community activists will press the city again on Wednesday to keep the schools open.
We're going to be there on May 22nd. We're going to continue to march today to call attention to this issue, because all of these parents are not only workers or parents, they have their children in these schools. It's not right. And we want Mayor Rahm Emanuel to listen to the community, to listen to the workers, and more importantly, listen to the children.
Recently re-elected Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis says the protests are not only against school closings, but also against what she calls misguided corporate school reforms. The unions are also mobilizing politically against Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Chicago is a people's town. Get down! Chicago is a people's town.
All five University of California medical centers are seeing strike action today as healthcare workers walk off the job to demand fair pay, retirement security, and increased patient safety. Jesse Russell reports.
As many as 30,000 nurses and technical workers are expected to be off the job and walking the picket lines. The workers calling the strike are members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. But other unions that represent UC medical employees are also expected to respect the strike line. One of the primary issues of the workers has been the increased request for concessions by the workers, while executives continue to watch their salaries grow year over year. The unions and management have agreed that key personnel shall stay on the job during the strike to ensure the safety of patients. Last week, the university canceled all elective surgical procedures. The union has been in contract talks with management for nearly a year. 2 weeks ago, 97% of voting AFSCME workers authorized the union to call a strike as leverage in contract negotiations.
Hundreds of low-wage workers in Washington, D.C. employed under federal contracts, concessions, and leases are striking today. The workers at Ronald Reagan and old post office buildings, the Smithsonian Museums, and Union Station are all calling on President Obama to guarantee a living wage and a voice on the job. The workers have formed Good Jobs Nation, an organization to ensure private contractors pay living wages and improve working conditions for all workers employed by federal dollars. Tuesday's strike follows actions by low-wage workers in Detroit, Milwaukee, New York, St. Louis, and Chicago. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Look, we know in days like yesterday and today, we have a lot of work to do. We got to make sure that we work with our counterparties, our clients, to get the answers they want, and we're pursuing that as we speak. And we're also exploring other alternatives, such as strategic investments or investors and other financing alternatives. So we have work to do, and we're doing it right now.
What exactly does that mean?
My capital. $440 million? Wow. Well, hey, you know, it's just a drop in the bucket, right? Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So members of the class of 2013 at Columbia University were in the streets this morning protesting, you know, saying, hey, you know what, we're buried under debt. We need some help. $1 trillion, in excess of $1 trillion, this generation's been saddled. If you want to talk about redistribution of wealth, we've stolen from these kids' future in the hopes that they're going to get an education. And what have we asked of our friends on Wall Street? Well, nothing, really. Just don't crash the economy again, which is why I've asked Gavin McCown. He is a graduate of Columbia University, class of 2013. Gavin, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how's it going?
So what took you out in the streets today?
We're holding an action this morning, first to raise awareness on the crippling level of student debt that we personally have taken on, and that our classmates have taken on, and that the class of 2013 nationwide, has taken on, and also to, raise awareness about the Robin Hood tax, which is a proposed means of raising, the revenue sufficient to address, both student debt and, a number of other, pressing social issues.
So, you know, as I saw a study not just within the last day or two that said the class of 2013, your class, is going to be saddled with, on average, more than $25,000 in student loan debt. And
right.
I think it was like 13%, more than $50,000, and I think like 4 or 5% in excess of $100,000 in student loan debt. And I'm going, you know, what kind of jobs are you going to end up with where you're going to be able to pay that? You're going to be saddled with debt for your entire life.
Well, you know, we're graduating into one of the most dismal job climates that's been around in a generation. And I have a number of friends today who are graduating and haven't secured jobs and are buried under debt, and I have absolutely no idea how they're going to pay this stuff off.
So what do you think of Elizabeth Warren's idea of letting people borrow at the rates that banks borrow at?
Well, I mean, I think it's really interesting, right, because banks are able to borrow at an extremely low interest rate, which, you know, individual, like, 18-year-olds can't do, but these powerful financial institutions can. And then, I mean, it's a really obvious irony, but, you know, if a bank fucks up, then there's the federal government that steps in to bail you out. But if I fuck up and, you know, I can't pay that stuff off, it's really difficult for me to get.
It's difficult for you to get through to that. And look, you know, at the end of this, you know, I look at this student loan debt, and it's a huge number. We're talking about a lot of money. That you're talking about this whole push of this whole saddling of the next generation with massive amounts. And, you know, even you look at Elizabeth Warren's proposal. You look at this, we can borrow it at what the banks get. We still haven't done what I think we need to do, which is what they've done in past generations. I don't know, pay for it and allow workers and allow students to get that minimum wage jobs. I got a friend who graduated from Michigan Law School working on tips, minimum wage jobs. Didn't come out with any student loan whatsoever. For me, Gavin, what we need to be doing is, I believe, funding higher education because it's an investment in our future, not making you and future generations go, oh, going to have to gamble on your future. Are you willing to roll the dice? Are you willing to take out huge debt? I say as a matter of investment for the future, it's something we should be doing for our kids.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that brings us right back to the Robin Hood tax, which the proposal is to levy a 0.5% tax on financial transactions, so the trading of stocks and bonds, which is estimated to raise up to $350 billion in revenue every year. And this would go to a number of important programs, including rebuilding infrastructure, funding HIV/AIDS research, and also forgiving student debt. And in a world where, effectively, in order to have a shot at the middle class, you need a university education, but where that the cost of that in education has risen so high while incomes have stagnated, effectively, for my generation, there's been no other choice beyond borrowing amounts that we now simply can't pay off and are graduating to job climate that's making it very difficult to pay our debt off. So the Robin Hood tax will effectively help our generation and the generations that follow us have a shot at real middle-class opportunity and will sort of help support the economy overall.
So what's the argument that it helps the economy overall, that you'd be able to buy a house and maybe start families and do all those things that the real
world
just wants
us to
do?
You have like a nation that's graduating with $26,000 on average in debt. Some of us met much more than that. And that means that, you know, we're paying this stuff off for 10 years, 15 years. It means that we're going to be renting, we can't get mortgages, it depresses consumption, and what you're looking at is effectively, a world, like a whole generation, that is, unable to support the economy, because of the debt that we're paying off. So you help forgive that, and people can all of a sudden buy into the housing market.
Yeah.
Which, and sort of help to, support those parts of the economy that help to spur growth and help us all out.
Walk me through this, though, because, you know, I've had a number of conversations with people around my age. I'm 46 and maybe a little bit older than me, who said, you know what, I had to work through college. I had to take on student loan. Why should we be forgiving their debt? They took it on. They knew what they were doing. How do you respond to that?
Well, I respond to that by saying that the times have changed a little bit, and they've changed in the following ways. First, Joe Stiglitz from Columbia published this great op-ed, which put it really succinctly a couple days ago. You know, the United States is not going to go back to making textiles. We have a knowledge-based economy right now, which means that in order to drive economic growth, one, and in order for individuals to have a share in that economic growth, two, you basically need a middle class. You need a university education. So we kind of need this. It's our ticket to economic opportunity, right? It's our ticket to, like, actually making it rather than being in a really difficult economic situation. Meanwhile, because of the financial crisis, in part because just sort of generations of poor economic management on all levels of government, the cost of attending universities, even and especially public universities, has risen immensely, especially since the crash in 2009, while median incomes have stagnated. So basically, we have no option in order to sort of have any kind of economic opportunity in this world at all, in this brave, new, and very dangerous world, we need the education that we have a harder and harder time affording, and so we need to borrow more and more in order to make this gamble. But it's not clear that this is going to pay off. On the other hand, we have no choice. In some ways, we have no choice but to make the gamble. So we're really in a double bind. Yeah, that's a unique situation. It's one that my parents weren't in.
Yeah, I remember I'd given a speech at a rally, I guess a year and a half or two ago, and one of the kids that I met on the dais was saying that, you know, the factory that my grandparents worked in, the factory that my father worked in, it's not there. The only opportunity that I'm going to have is if I graduate from college and I have this skill, this knowledge that's going to help me get that job. And I hope he did. His prospects weren't all that bright when I talked to him the last time. But, you know, that's what you've been saddled with. We've given away our industrial base. We've given away a large portion of our economy to countries that have low wages and poor conditions so that the very well-to-do can do even better. And we've left huge swaths of our society, well, nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So what do we do? What's the ask on this? What are you guys asking me? What are you asking my listeners to do?
I think go and just, like, research the situation, just know the facts. And then there's been a bill proposed in the House, which Representative Keith Ellison has just proposed, which is the Robin Hood tax. I'm forgetting the number right now, but if you Google it, you can find that.
It's HR 1579,
I think.
HR 1579.
And then call your representative and ask them for their support, for the Robin Hood tax.
I appreciate the time, Gavin. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I look at this, Pat, and, you know, the reality is, you know, I remember that kid, you know, vividly. That, you know, he was dead serious. If I fail, if I don't have the ability or the money or the resource to be able to finish, because he was very concerned. The governor was at the time proposing a 50% cut to higher ed, he said, there's just no way I can afford to go back to school. And where do I go to when that happens? Because I'm not going to be able to afford to take on more loans and pay more money for my education. He said, I'm just not. And it's going to leave me nowhere.
Well, you're going to go bankrupt, and then your income taxes will be garnished. Your income tax returns will be garnished for the rest of your life, and that money will be turned over to the bank that had this unfair advantage over you in the first place. We've been talking about experiences and what was the difference between this kid and me, say, for example. I graduated from Boston College in 1982. I started BC, and my freshman year tuition was $3,000. The freshman year, $3,000. It's $52,000 now to go to Boston College.
$52,000?
$3,000. It's absolutely, if I was 800 years old, that might make sense. That might be an okay rate of inflation if it took 800 years. My final year, now by the time I graduated in 1982, the illustrious Ronald Reagan, who started eviscerating support to private education and public education, higher education, I should say, my tuition was already $10,000 by my senior year.
Wow.
So it had more than tripled, and that was the beginning of the end. And then George W. Bush said, I know what we'll do. We'll put a banker right in the middle of a kid in their education, and once the banker's in the middle, who cares how much it costs? The kids can just keep borrowing it. And the bottom line for today will look good for these banks, and everything will be healthy until the economic collapse of 2008. Then they bail the banks out, and the kids don't get bailed out.
And the better part of this is we start this war, so you have all these guys coming back with their GI Bill money, and this private for-profit college industry props up, where, you know, basically diploma mills, or if you finish at all, charging huge, exorbitant online rates to bilk the government out of money. It's a perfect
a perfect capitalist system.
And then the poor vet finds out it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. They don't get their education like my father did after World War II. Absolutely. And then on top of that, the vet has all these other problems, as many suicides as there were deaths in theater. Has anybody noticed that we've just been basically screwing everybody who doesn't make at least $5 million a year?
Well, that's the way it should be, isn't it?
How about the guy that fought for you so that you could make $5 million a year?
Tool.
Maybe we should...
No, we...
maybe we should stop. Just, okay, if you're not going to care about babies and mommies and grandparents and old people and blah, 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 if you could only care about the veteran, if you could only walk, that one walk... No, you can't do it, huh? I mean, was it like 13,000, 19,000? I forget the number. I can look it up. Yeah. Of veterans who died last year waiting for their benefits? They died. One woman said, I really don't think my husband would have died if he'd been able to get his health care.
Yeah.
And then posthumously the benefits were paid to their survivors. $43 million.
Jeez. Yeah, I remember going back to my childhood and I've been accused of being anti-military, in which, you know, institutionally I am, because of things like this. It's the people at the bottom, it's the worker bees who end up getting the screws in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, and it goes back to my childhood, like a lot of things psychologically, it goes back to your childhood. I remember Vietnam ending, and I don't know why. I didn't know what was going on or really why, because I was just a young kid. But I remember every time I saw one of those heavy army green coats with someone's name written across it and some numbers, I remember seeing someone broken. I remember seeing someone with a horrible drug or alcohol problem, their minds or their bodies broken. I remember the guy who they found dead on the side of the neighbor's house with a needle in his arm. I remember in July with the heavy army green coat on. That's what I remember. And my hope when all of this started, and I said this on air numerous times, my hope was always that we would have learned the lessons and we wouldn't see that. We're not seeing it, but that doesn't mean it's not happening.
I can get on your show tomorrow night a Vietnam veteran whose helicopter was shot out of the sky. He was trying to save an ARVN, which was the Army of South Vietnam, our allies. He was trying to save him. He'd been hurt. The pilots die. He survives because he went up front to say, can you keep this helicopter a little more steady? My guy's dying. He was wedged between the two seats just right so that he only, like, snapped his legs. And he was in Vietnam, never fired a shot in anger. He was just a medic. He got shot plenty of times. He comes home. He says, we will never do a war like that again. I know we won't. His son died 5 years ago in Fallujah. I met him in a homeless shelter. I can let you talk to this man tomorrow or Thursday or whatever night you want, who paid the ultimate price of all of his everything. He comes home, he goes to school, he becomes a productive part of society, he's an intensive care nurse at Johns Hopkins, and then his son dies in Fallujah, and his world completely collapses. It all comes apart. The wheels are off the wagon. There's no way to survive. And this was what a grateful nation did for him? Get right back into another worthless war? And it's like you said, it's not the soldiers.
No.
It's that jackass who was hiding in the Alabama National Guard. It's him that said, I can send your National Guardsmen to war, and I don't have to go.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts right back. Stick around.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith. It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together, we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Stock market soars, exulted a typical headline in early May when the Dow Jones average topped 15,000. But this index of Wall Street wealth gives a false picture of our nation's true economic health. Yes, the privileged few are doing extremely well, but the workaday many are struggling and falling further and further behind as the jobs market sinks steadily from mere recession down into depression. The monthly unemployment reports don't tell the depths of misery out here in the real world beyond the view of Wall Street and Washington elites. For example, President Obama hailed the news that unemployment dipped to 7.5% in April. Unstated, though, was the stark reality that this good news dip was not due to a jump in job offerings, but to a bad news labor market so weak and discouraging that Americans are dropping out of it or never entering it. More than a third of our working-age population is no longer even in the job market, and only 58.6% of us are employed. Put the opposite way, 41% of the potential workforce is not working, about 102 million people. One more statistic, and it's a chiller. More than one out of five American families report that last year, not a single family member had a job. Our people are trapped in a jobs crisis that's sucking the economic vitality out of our nation, but our leaders even refuse to acknowledge it. In fact, corporate chieftains deliberately exacerbate the crisis by hoarding trillions of dollars that ought to be rushed into job-creating expansions. And politicians add to the casualties by gleefully firing hundreds of thousands of teachers, firefighters, and other valuable public employees. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's middle class is burning to the ground, while Washington fiddles with nonsense and Wall Street feathers its own nest. It's disgraceful.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Last year, 120,000 people over the age of 60 in the United States of America had their Social Security payments garnished because of student loan debt. It is a multi-generational crisis. And anybody who has, you know, sweated over their sons and daughters' student loan payments knows that it's not just about students. It's about all of us.
Senior citizens. 120,000 had their Social Security checks garnished because of student loans. Think about that for a second. Think how massive that number is.
It's brilliant.
And when I interviewed that guy, he said, you know, in the 5 years prior to that, there were two. I mean, think about it. I mean, what is going on is as we've lost manufacturing jobs in this country, as we've given away our industrial base, because, you know, for 100 years we used to hold this title as the nation that had the most powerful manufacturing base. You know, something we kind of had some pride in, if you remember. We've given that away. And you know, look, I don't mind losing. I don't. You know, if you do your best, you fight, you compete. You know, like the right wingers are, we just need to compete more. We didn't really compete. We gave it away. And it wasn't us giving it away. It was these corporate titans. It's the modern-day robber barons who said, hey, I can make extra money over there, ship my goods back here, and you people are going to have to buy it because we've got these big-box retailers who, you know, the lower prices, they've sold you. they're going to stock the shelves with my stuff and not yours.
I walked through town today to get over here, and I walked by the shoe building, the shoe manufacturing building and stuff, and I'm looking at all these places, and I'm thinking, wow, they're empty. You know, I mean, you know it's true. You know the businesses, the manufacturing businesses are gone. But they're still, the name is still engraved in the stone.
Yeah.
You know, like a tombstone for monument.
We'll tear that down soon. But, you know, the thing that gets me, and you know, last weekend was the graduation at Dickinson and at Millersville, where Governor Corbett gave his speech to church mice. just to sit there and watch that is just mind blowing. You got a sitting governor who nothing. There was he had punchlines written and nothing. How would you like to give a speech to that?
You know, I've written a lot of speeches for people. I just don't think I'd write him funny stuff. Somehow, I just don't think he'd pull it off.
Yeah, well,
you got to know your delivery system.
That's true. But you know, I over the weekend, I took my kids to this new little diner that we've. And it's not new. It's a new place for us. We've been locally for quite some time, but just decided to go in this place. And there were a couple of college kids at the restaurant. And they were graduating, and they were sitting there at the counter, because my kids love sitting at the counter. And what I found interesting...
Were you sitting with them?
Of course I was.
Oh, okay. Just wondered. Really, the kids love sitting up there.
Well, no, I mean, they like spinning around on the little stools. That. Come on. When you were a kid, you did too.
Yeah,
but, you know, as I'm sitting here talking with these two kids, boy and a girl, I shouldn't say that, man and a woman, they were saying, well, you know, they don't really have jobs yet. You know, they lead on an internship. One had a lead on an internship. You know, one was going to take a job outside the field, but that was just going to be temporary. And really didn't want to talk about how far in debt they were, although they said, a pretty sizable debt. The one who did get the job didn't really want to say what they earned. And both, I walked away from the conversation with both of them, feeling that they both feared going into the workforce because of all of the things that, they feared, talking about salary, they feared talking about their student loan, and I guess, as the woman earlier said, Caitlin said, they do a pretty good job of, society does a good job of shaming us. And I thought about these kids that, they've taken on this debt, they've made this gamble that they've told, going to lead them to the middle class. This is the golden ticket. And they're finding out there's nobody validating that ticket.
Well, just like, we do have cultures. And just like the culture of poverty that says, don't waste your time. And if you get an extra $2,000 this year, of course buy a flat screen TV. What else are you going to do with it? You save it for something? You're never going to have anything.
Yeah, I can live that long.
Don't save it for something.
Yeah, I can live that long. Yeah. I got to be honest. I never thought I'd live past 30.
There's nothing going to be valuable that you can afford. $2,000 is going to be the maximum amount of money you ever have in your hands. So you may as well get something you like.
And if you live in the state of Pennsylvania, if you fall on hard times and you need food stamps or some assistance, you can't have that money because, well,
right.
They
so you've got to liquidate it now. Yeah. Got to liquidate it now.
So there's that mentality.
But just like that mentality, there's the mentality of the upper middle class that says, "Well, I got to go to college. I have to. What am I going to do? I have to get an education. I have no other, like you said, there are no factory jobs. There's no, what am I going to do?" So you go to college, you rack up the $100,000 in debt, or if you're really lucky, only 20. And then you get out, you say, this is what happened to my kids. I wanted to go to college. How come this isn't good for me anymore?
Yeah.
And I tried to talk both my kids into going to grad school because one kid graduated in 2008 in May. Guess what happened in October? And the other kid graduated in 2009. Well, not really any better yet.
Smoking, it's still not any better.
Yeah.
And I just saw a study the other day that says most of the people who are getting jobs out of college don't need a degree for the job.
Well, because they can't use the degree that they got. And that's a real shame. And that's because George W. Bush opted out of the science competitions. He pulled the United States out of competing in the science tests with the Chinese and the Russians and the French and the British. He did it the year after the South Africans beat us. We came in like 16th. And, when you're insisting that No Child Left Behind is the answer, when No Child Left Behind is just a way to prove that a standardized test is all that a kid needs to learn, so that you can then yank the funding from the schools. You can say, look, the standardized test, the schools aren't working. Look at the standardized test, show it.
And my daughter played teaching my younger two kids, saying, if you don't pass the test, they're going to take the money away and close our schools. They're teaching my kid that, which is why I, one of the reasons, you know, other than my religious exemption, which is why I said, you know, I don't want to take these damn tests.
Good for you.
You know,
absolutely.
When you hear that, and it wasn't in an angry tone, it was as a matter of fact, saying, look, if we don't pass these tests, they're going to defund us and we're not going to have a school.
Yeah, so please study hard so that you have a school to come back to.
This is a 10-year-old.
That wouldn't even work if kids didn't want to go to school. And that's the biggest crime of all. These kids actually want to go to school, and a fear is somebody might close their school. You know what? If someone said to me they're closing your school, I would have said, like, well, sign me up. What do you need from me? How do I help you get this place shut down? You know?
That would have been me. You know, those evil, sadistic nuns with the pointers.
Soaked up toilet paper from the bathroom, whipped out windows at people.
Wow.
I'll be doing it.
Wow.
Hey, that tended to keep people away from your school.
See, the beatings that I took from the nuns, that tended to...
Well, those are the nuns we were hitting.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, I know, yeah.
No. Yeah. The nuns I had made Darth Chaney look sane. Made him look lucid. In fact, we used to joke that when the mafia needed bodyguards, they'd call the Notre Dame nuns.
Oh, yeah, because who'd mess with... Actually, that probably was true, because if you're mafia fighting mafia, you're not going to mess with a nun. But 30 seconds. Pope Francis is in trouble.
Exorcist.
Hey, he exorcised somebody right in the middle. And I don't mean like they were out in St. Peter's Basilica doing jumping jacks. I mean real exorcism.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, here's the thing. And I read that, and for me, there's part of... And this is the smear campaign, I think. Because here's a guy who's actually talking There's a guy who's actually talking about poverty. There's a guy who's actually talking about paying people a decent wage and having safe working conditions like we're going to be doing tomorrow.
He's also a guy who can't stand women.
Well, there is that. But I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. He put his hands on somebody and he said his prayer and all that, and the kid convulsed. And look, you know, blowing it way out of exorcism. I'm thinking of Reagan in the movie The Exorcist, the head spinning around.
Yeah, why you do this to me?
Expel you! No, come on.
You know what? I think this is the most excitement they've had in the Vatican in a while.
Well,
Lord knows.
Let's hope this is it. Let's hope this is the only way he puts his hands on a teenage boy.
But the great thing about this is, it's exciting for the kid. I'm not saying that to be funny.
No.
The Pope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Come on.
Absolutely. And, if this guy keeps it up, who knows? Maybe I'll return to the church at some point.
But only if you can't stand it. Well, whatever. Anything that says my mother wasn't good enough to work, my mother wasn't good enough for one of the jobs, women can't do that job. My mother was a wonderful person. She was fabulous. She cared more about the poor than anyone I've ever met.
That. But for me, the church that I grew up under was social justice and peace. And if the Catholic Church returned to those roots, who knows? Never say never.
I can never let go of the woman word when you call it social justice.
Good point. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Wake up in the morning, just to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tells you that you're over someone else. So what's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So an article this morning in Roll Call. Basically saying this Benghazi thing, in my view, this Benghazi thing's over because Republican staffers are going, you know, there's some real issues and then there's stuff that's just crazy stuff. And saying, you know, this whole call for an investigation, you know, kind of going crazy stuff. All of this saying, wow, if we had more M4 rifles in there, it would have just been four more people that probably got killed and it wouldn't have changed the outcome. At least this is what the article is saying, and they've pointed out that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has kind of backed away from some of the Republicans' claims that it was a cover-up. You've got John Mica, who is the head of one of the committees, saying that, yeah, I'm going to drop my support for this select committee investigation. Like I said from the beginning, a whole lot of screaming and hollering. Not much there. Anyway, let's find out what's going on in Washington and around the world. I've got Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick, good to be on with you.
So I look at this, and, you know, I said from the beginning, what did they want? They cut the funding. They did a lot of things that caused a shortage. And look, four more people in there, would that have stopped what happened? I don't know.
Well, I mean, from all accounts, we know that it wouldn't have stopped the first wave of attacks, that's for sure. Remember, there was the first wave around 9:30 at night, and that was the attack that led to the death of Chris Stevens. And then there was another wave of attacks in the morning, and that's where Republicans have been focusing our energies on that. You know, could we have prevented that second attack? And the reports are sort of conflicting. I mean, it depends who you're listening to.
Yeah.
You know, you've had the State Department Accountability Review Board, which is chaired by Admiral Mullen and former Ambassador Pickering, say that it probably, you know, you probably wouldn't have been able to stop the second wave of attacks from happening anyway because the reinforcements wouldn't have been able to get there in time. They found that there was no sort of cover-up or anything like that, but rather, you know, perhaps too much reliance on local militiamen who weren't properly trained or either were disinterested, and, you know, some management inefficiencies. Now, the Republicans allege that it's more than that, and, you know, I hear that they're sort of loosening their grip on wanting to pursue this scandal, but I think that ultimately it's probably going to come back. And the reason I say that is because I think that a lot of what this is going after Hillary Clinton and attempting to discredit her. And, I mean, from all accounts, we know that Hillary Clinton is going to run for president.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if she's a shoo-in to win the nomination, but she's definitely the favorite at this point. It's kind of crazy that we're talking about the next election, but it is what it is. And I think that Republicans are going to try really hard to discredit her because they know that she's an extremely viable candidate in 2016.
And that's an excellent point. For me, though, I look at, you know, the fact is it was a lot of money was taken from it. I saw Robert Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey, introduced a bill last week to increase embassy security funding. I'm curious where that's going to go. Maybe we'll need offsets for that, too, huh?
Well, one of the things that's actually President Obama talked about that last week in a press conference. He said that one of the things he wants Congress to do is approve not maybe his whole budget. He knows that's unlikely, but at least the provision that would increase funding for embassy protection. And I believe that his budget that he just put forth this year would increase funding to about $4 billion annually, with I think $2.2 billion going toward training and training of outside forces. So there's a lot of money there, and obviously that funding level is not being met right now. That's what the president wants to see happen.
So how much did they want? What did you say, $4 billion?
$4 billion total.
$4 billion. So, but here's the problem, Jeff. If you listen to a lot of the screamers and hollers, we're broke. We don't have any money. We're about ready to shut the lights off. They're going to repossess the furniture. There's nothing left. We can't do it.
Well, it's going to be really, really tough for the president, obviously, because, you know, these days, anytime you call for increased funding, it's met with a lot of cries that we can't, you know, spend any more money.
But here's the thing, Jeff.
The president is going to have to battle Congress on this, particularly House Republicans, who are not interested in giving him more money. You know, it's going to be a struggle, but it's also going to be interesting to see what Republicans are interested in increasing funding for. And it's perhaps a situation where if they do, you know, vote, if they do get together and pass a budget this year and they have, you know, 4 months or so to do that, 3 months plus, I'd say less than a 50-50 chance at this point, but if they do, you know, that some agency out there is going to get a funding increase. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Democrats say, wait a minute, you know, you want to give a funding increase to, you know, so-and-so, perhaps some agency within the Pentagon, but you don't want to increase embassy funding. That could be a political argument Democrats could use.
Yeah, but I've got an idea where we could get the money under this broke idea, because I saw that Timothy Cook, the CEO of Apple, was in front of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, where it came up. Carl Levin, the chairman of the subcommittee, said that in 2011 or 2012, Apple avoided $9 billion in U.S. taxes. $9 billion, not doing anything illegally. Basically, just the rules that they have lobbied for, people in the Senate and Congress have given them all these tax havens and these ability to shelter money overseas. You wonder, if we're broke, why are we still giving them $9 billion?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty amazing stuff. And again, the most important thing to look at here is the fact that Apple is not breaking any laws.
Nope.
There are so many loopholes in the current tax code. With respect to corporations and how they can, you know, sort of dodge paying taxes. In the case of Apple, what they've done is essentially set up a trio of subsidiary companies. They're essentially shell companies, though. They don't do anything. They're based in Ireland, but they don't actually have any employees. They don't make anything. And in fact, Apple CEO Tim Cook testified before Congress today and said, you know, we don't do any of our, you know, product manufacturing. We don't do any of our intellectual property stuff over there. I mean, these are simply companies, shell companies that exist for the purpose of serving as tax shelters where Apple can, you know, funnel money to. And they have an agreement with Ireland that they are a non-tax paying resident of the state or of the country. And
right.
So therefore they're not taxed.
Which is why I thought during the presidential election, why I thought it was so important to see Mitt Romney's taxes. Not because I thought he did anything wrong, but because I want to see where these loopholes are. I thought a conversation should have been had about where the very well-to-do in this country hide their money. You know, I've got to pay tax on every dime that I earn. I got to be honest. I think the well-heeled should be paying their fair share as well. And I'd like to know. And we should be having the conversation. Is it worth having these loopholes? Look, I'm a big fan of loopholes when you have a tax rate that's fairly high because you want to incentivize certain behavior. You want to incentivize building and education and investment and research and development and products and, you know, all that stuff. But at one of the lowest rates, you know, in the last 60 years, and then to still have these massive gaping holes that, well, you can have the companies like Apple shelter hiding their money, you know, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what it is it's a U.S. federal subsidy, for these companies to allow them to store their cash overseas. It's basically the taxpayers, subsidizing.
No, it's welfare. It's welfare is what it is. And what we've got is we've got people
sure.
who are pointing their fingers at that single mother who's trying to raise their kids and feed the kids with food stamps because they don't have a choice. And here we've got this company $9 billion last year alone.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with $9 billion. I mean, look, we just had a huge disaster in Oklahoma. We don't know exactly how much it's going to cost to cover the damage on that, but it's assuredly going to be somewhere in the low billions. There's your recovery fund right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at this, and, you know, what bothers me is you've got somebody who, one of the two senators from the state of Oklahoma are people who've worked over the years to try and defund FEMA.
Yeah, well, Tom Coburn and James Inhofe are both very, very conservative, particularly on fiscal issues. Coburn's got a whole book, waste book, he calls it, on areas to cut funding, and I think that FEMA is one of the agencies that he recommends cutting back on. And actually, Coburn said something interesting today on MSNBC. He said that he thought that all the disaster relief funding for Oklahoma should be offset with budget cuts.
which isn't necessarily news that Coburn would advocate that principle, but it's the fact that it's his constituents in his state.
Yep.
Perhaps being politically aware of that, Coburn put a statement out on his website later in the day saying that, you know, citizens or voters in his state will get all the resources that they need and in a timely fashion. And it was sort of a vague statement. And to be fair, the White House sort of said the same thing when asked about offsets, you know.
Yeah, but they've never come out with and saying, well, the only way we're going to do it is with offsets.
Well, no, sure. I mean, that's not their core principle, is not to advocate for offsets the day after a disaster to say we're going to get all the money out and deal with, you know, the financial issues later. And really, I mean, there are a lot of people on both sides who would tell you that if there's any, you know, main function and chief function of the federal government, it is to respond to natural disasters.
Yep.
And sort of take care of the situation first, worry about the money later.
Well, how much of this do you think is, you know, the people who are against it don't want to see government work? That, you know, this is an opportunity that, you know, hey, look, this is where government steps in. This is where we, the people, step in to do for ourselves. And I think back to Mitt Romney saying, wow, you know, we should be giving things back to the private sector. We shouldn't have FEMA doing anything. All of this should be done by for-profit corporations.
Yeah, I mean, that could be sort of a component of it. People don't want, there are critics of this administration that don't want the administration to get credit for anything.
Not just the administration, but government as a whole. Just the idea.
I mean, you know, there obviously there are some folks out there, who would advocate for the diminished, if not non-existent, federal government role, including when it comes to natural disaster response.
I like James Inhofe's statement. He said that aid for people in Oklahoma is totally different than aid for the people during Hurricane Sandy, because everyone was getting in and exploiting the tragedy taking place. He said that won't happen in Oklahoma, and I'm glad he's so confident. But I love that whole divide. We're gonna pit each of the people in disasters against each other. How low can you get?
Yeah, I mean that's never a good thing to do politically, but it's also a dangerous statement because if you look at most of these supplemental appropriations bills for disasters, a lot of times, most of the time, I would say, they have funding for non-related projects. It wasn't necessarily that Hurricane Sandy was a unique scenario in which, you know, you had money for rail in there that wasn't necessarily directly related. There's been precedent that going back many, many years. So I think for Inhofe, it's sort of a good luck. It's going to be a difficult quest to get a bill that strictly is used for, you know, disaster relief in that area of Oklahoma City that got hit.
So what's the talk in Washington? Is this part of climate change? Is this a new normal? I know Inhofe loves to say that, you know, climate change is a hoax, I think is the word he used for it. Is this part of it? Is the talk around that?
Well, there's been some talk. I mean, for the most part, Washington has sort of learned its lessons from the past in terms of politicizing natural disasters as soon as they happen. There were a lot of critics jumped on Sheldon Whitehouse today. Sheldon Whitehouse gave a speech last night on the Senate floor in which he mentioned Oklahoma as part of a speech going after Republicans for opposing climate change. And a lot of folks jumped on him today and said, you're too quick to blame Republicans and blame this on climate change. But there are a lot of folks, proponents of climate change legislation, who say that if you look at the weather trends, that there is a correlation between, you know, climate change and the frequency and enormity of these storms. Sheldon Whitehouse obviously isn't alone, but he's become sort of the face of the movement in Congress to get timber legislation up. And I wouldn't be surprised, maybe not tomorrow or next week, but at some point, maybe later this year, to see sort of a more robust debate on climate change happen. You got to remember, I mean, this is a big part of the President's State of the Union address this year, as well as his inaugural speech. He really put it out on the line that he was going to make climate change part of his agenda for the second term. We haven't seen any movement on it yet, but the way Washington works is a very reactive culture. If something bad happens, that's usually when you get legislation born out of it. So we could see something later this year.
That'll be interesting. The IRS stuff that's headed up, I saw the former IRS chief, Douglas Shulman, who testified, who said that, you know, he was saddened and dismayed by the Inspector General's report and that he denied doing anything wrong.
Well, I mean, it's just kind of an interesting hearing. Interesting in the sense that it wasn't really a newsy hearing. Douglas Shulman didn't really, you know, shine any new light on any new details, but it's more of what he didn't do, which was apologize. He was asked to, and he said, you know what, you know, I regret that this happened on my watch, but don't blame me. I didn't have anything to do with it. And I think for a lot of people, that didn't really pass the smell test. First off, there's a lot of skepticism over the story that's come out. I think a lot of people say that there's more to the story, that more people at the IRS knew that we're being told right now. And perhaps we'll learn more details in the coming days. But I think particularly for someone like Shulman to have led the agency during a period of time in which this was happening for him to say that he didn't know about it is quite shocking to a lot of people. But that's essentially what he said today.
Yeah. I'm interested. Tomorrow, this Lois Lerner, she's someone who they're saying played a fairly key role in this in screening the Tea Party groups. She's going to invoke the Fifth Amendment tomorrow.
Yeah, her lawyer wrote to Chairman Issa in the House Oversight Committee today and said that she's going to plead the Fifth because there's an ongoing Department of Justice investigation into the IRS and particularly into Lois Lerner to figure out whether she did anything criminal. And the lawyer for her, or her attorney, I should say, said that, you know, she doesn't want to implicate herself during this congressional hearing. He also asked Issa for permission to have her not appear, saying that it would just be embarrassing for her to have to go in front of the committee and plead the Fifth over and over and over. To my knowledge, I don't think ISA has granted that. So I think she is still scheduled to appear tomorrow morning. It should be a circus.
Oh, no, that's what this is all about. I mean, it's the political theater. It's the show. They're going to put her out there to do that so that the right-wing talking heads will have that. And for me, you know, I look at this, and I look at it from a couple of different perspectives. One, you know, the Tea Party groups, those are the groups who are the anti-tax people. And I got to be honest, in looking at that, you got to wonder, are these people doing this to evade paying taxes? And then the other part of it is the conversation I think should happen is there should be no tax exempt status for any of these groups in my view. Pay your damn taxes like everybody else.
Well, I mean, the way the law is written right now, there's certainly a huge gray area because it says if you are a social welfare organization, you're eligible to receive tax exempt status. But the definition of social welfare, I think, is going to be something that really comes into the spotlight in the coming weeks and months. After this, you know, the whole scandal involving the IRS dies down, people are really going to say, you know, if you're devoting close to 50% of your time and money on political campaign, does that meet the criteria of social welfare? I mean, obviously these groups would say yes, that they're, you know, they're informing the public, that they're advocating a principle that, you know, informative and so on and so forth. But there are obviously going to be a ton of critics who say that it isn't, and that they're just simply existing to influence elections and not really doing a public service. So that's going to be the big debate coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, we'll see. And finally, immigration bill passed tonight?
Well, immigration bill passed the Senate Judiciary Committee. And this was pretty notable. It's the first time that, you know, a big immigration bill that essentially would give, you know, citizenship to millions of immigrants living in the country illegally has gotten, you know, this close to passage. And when I say this close, I mean, it still has to go to the Senate floor where it's going to be debated for a while. It's probably not even going to be brought to the floor for a vote until June. And then at that point, even if it does pass the Senate, it's got numerous hurdles in the House, which we already talked about with Republicans controlling the lower chamber
right. And
generally not being supportive of this legislation. But nonetheless, a good first step for proponents of this reform bill. It did clear the Judiciary Committee. It got 13 votes. Three of them were Republicans. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, we'll see. Jeff, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
You too, Rick. Thanks.
Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Earth, sky.
The world's only recorded dinosaur stampede wasn't a stampede, according to Australian paleontologists.
Anthony Romilio at the University of Queensland led a study of fossilized tracks at the Dinosaur Stampede National Monument at Lark Quarry Conservation Park in Australia. He said the study suggests that the tracks were made by swimming, not running, dinosaurs. Romilio said that many of the tracks appear as elongated grooves. He thinks they were probably formed when the claws of swimming dinosaurs scratched the river bottom.
There are 4,000 dinosaur tracks at Lark Quarry, thought to be 95 million to 98 million years old. They were first discovered in the 1960s and are preserved in beds of siltstone and sandstone. It was thought that a shallow river once flowed here when this area was part of a vast, forested floodplain.
It was believed that a group of perhaps 180 small dinosaurs of two different species were disrupted when a much larger carnivorous dinosaur arrived. The small dinosaurs were thought to have stampeded, leaving thousands of footprints in the surrounding mudflat.
Anthony Ramilia said the tracks were made by just one dinosaur species, small, two-legged, plant-eating dinosaurs. He said the footprints were probably made over a period of several days by dinosaurs crossing the water. And he said the dinosaurs were swimming to cross the river, not stampeding. He published his research in the January 2013 issue of the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money.
Even if it has been money
for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
Of which you can buy now. And while it's high, and of course I'm sure you can find whatever the companies are that are hawking off little pieces of paper telling you it's gold, and because the end of the world's coming. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Let's go to the phones real quick. Got Mark on line one. How you doing tonight, Mark?
Hey, Rick. It's Mark calling from Florida, and I'd like to say hi to Pat. You guys were talking earlier, Rick, about you mentioned pollution. You weren't talking about it. But just remind the listeners, having been a former Marine, still am a former Marine, the Battle of Fallujah, but under George Bush, the presidential election in 04 went down during that battle, and when the activated reserve Marine Corps unit got hit heavily, they were an Ohio unit, got hit in the Battle of Fallujah. They were afraid that they would lose the state of Ohio, Rick, and so George Bush had the Americans withdraw. And actually, the Lieutenant General, which is a three-star Marine Corps general, resigned his commission. Task Force X-Ray, and another Marine Corps general involved with that both resigned because of that. And then a year later, they were sent back in there and took heavier casualties. So for all the Americans with their Chinese-made magnet support the troops, support the troop magnets on their vehicles, but don't pay attention to details like that's very costly. One other quick note, and I'll hang up, Rick. National Guardsmen were used because you go in at 20 and end up doing 20 years in the military and get down at age 40. If you're a National Guardsman, you don't collect your pension until you're 59 and a half. So for 20 years, Raytheon, Martin Marietta, Sikorsky will spend your pension for you. So there's always a corporate agenda behind everything, and I thank you guys for being on the air every day.
Thank you, Mark. And it's nice to talk to you, too. And I got to tell you, the 4 days that were most challenging, I think, of my lifetime, just for something I elected to do, was I went to Paris Island. I'm 44 years old, and I had the opportunity to understand why Marines are so proud. I also had an opportunity to look like an absolute idiot.
Well, you know, I didn't know. Patricia, you know, just doing that, I didn't know that the Marines were doing that. I think it's kind of a neat idea that they let Americans get that brush with that reality. Out of all the places I've been in the world, in the Marine Corps, I've been into northern training bases in northern Norway where we have a little, no people, but materials pre-staged. Actually had orders for Ceylon, Sri Lanka, where we had a pre-staging maritime pre-positioning warehouse situation there. I served on embassy duty in Central and South America, and I've been to Okinawa. I've been to all the places the Marine Corps is, actually. Japan, we've got a few Marines poking around there. Hawaii for 3 years, and I never made it to Paris Island, so you got one on me. But I tell the Paris Island Marines, I know you guys got fan fleets, but we've got mountain, they call it mountain MF-er at Camp Pendleton, and when you get to the top of that hill and you're 18 years old and you look down that hill being a native Midwesterner, I said, good gosh, I hope nobody's hurt. There's ambulances down there. And then the Marine drill instructor starts screaming at you,
get your ass down that mountain, and those ambulances ended up being for us, but little did I know. But son of a Marine and Desert Storm veteran, Embassy Guard in Benghazi was a sad situation, but this is
thanks,
my
Mark.
Community.
Yeah. I appreciate it, Mark. I'll talk,
all right, brother.
Talk to you again tomorrow. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Rick at the RickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at the